using free speech to free minds. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
As the clock strikes 13, it is Wednesday, the 22nd of September, year of our Lord, 2021, day 557 of the New World Orders. And if you want to see what this is going to look like, take a look at Australia. Today there's a lot of events, a lot more violence in Australia. The revolution there is picking up, and so are the militarized police. Unbelievable what we have seen unfold around the monument to people who fought for their freedom, who fought and died for the freedom of Australians in World War II. That has now become the site of unprovoked police violence. We're also going to have an interview today in the second hour with Sheriff Mack of the Constitutional Sheriffs Association. We're going to talk about the lesser magistrate and the importance of having some people at the local level who will stand with the Constitution. Stay with us. We're going to be right back. Well, I've had several listeners this morning sending me from Australia, sending me updates as to what was happening. And I want to give you some of the videos that have been breaking and tell you what is going on. The first one came from a listener who said, this is a group that made it to the Shrine of Remembrance in Melbourne. They've been sitting around peacefully while fully surrounded by police. And here's what this looks like. They're talking. They've got Australian flags. They're at the site that is a World War II monument. They call it the Place of Remembrance, the Shrine of Remembrance. He said, for the first time, there's been some peaceful negotiation from both sides. The police have said they would understand, that they understand why they're there. Some say, we agree with your reasons. They've even given the people their word that they can leave the area via the side without being arrested. They've also said they know that you'll be back tomorrow, and they said that's fine as well. So he said, people have been moving off, but some have been staying put. Still quite a few people there. He said, hopefully this ends peacefully, and this can happen again tomorrow. We will see. And then I got this update. These people are being branded as violent protesters by the mainstream media as the government decided that they would unilaterally start violence. Here's what this looks like. As some of these people are walking off to the side, they said, see, this guy's just kind of talking to him, and he talks to the police officer, and he's just kind of casually walking out. The guy opens the door, punches him in the stomach, takes him down. Two other guys come out. These guys are in green. These are not like the typical police that you see. Look at this. This is militarized. These are people who look like they're in the military. So he's just talking to them. He's like, you know, he's not threatening them or anything. He's kind of, you know, casual stance. Guy opens the door, comes out, and punches him as hard as he can in the stomach, and the guy just folds. And then two other guys join him, and they, all three of them, jump on him. Another one of these soldiers comes up to intimidate the person who is filming it. As he said, I had hope. We all had hope. We thought we had their trust, but not anymore. As I said before, people were sitting peacefully. They were ultimately told to move on and exit through the side in small groups. Apparently, the ones that did this got arrested outside the area. Well, it's not confirmed, but we can see this picture here. The rumors started going through the crowd, and they started yelling at the police. The cops started shooting rubber rounds again in the crowd. And they said some of us pulling in as many people as they could and arresting them. The police have now lost the people's trust. Some of us thought we had it there for a little bit. But it appears not now. This is the feeling on the ground. And he says, please know that this occurred at the Shrine of Remembrance, probably the most symbolic area in the city, representing the diggers. It's what we call the Aussie soldiers in World War II that died in war for our freedom. So at the shrine, This is what the police then started to do, just as you saw that unprovoked attack, punching him in the stomach and jumping on him from the soldiers. This is what the rest of this is like.
We have the opportunity to make history today by being Russian Russo.
I'm sorry, that was the peace of crowd. This is what it looks like as they start to move against
them. Okay, they're shooting. They're now shooting. They're now shooting people. You can hear the, oh my God. They're just shooting at everyone now. They are, bullets are going flying through the place. And, you can still see through here. There are kids here. This is an absolute disgrace to the Shrine of Remembrance.
Look at that.
That they've come here and they're taking it over and causing violence and destruction to peaceful protesters.
Jackbooted thugs
that are here,
armored in black suits,
on this land,
taking over this shrine and shooting at unarmed people.
The Anzacs that fought for our country and our freedoms, and now we're doing the same by trying to fight for our freedoms. They're shooting again. They're going through the trees and everything. All the bullets have been here, like just flying through the trees, and the whizzing sound of it going through the air. And you can see absolutely mental.
Totally necessary to shoot these people, right? Totally necessary. No, not at all. As a matter of fact, you can see another view. This is from an elevated view. Look at how the police are running through the streets of this city. And you can hear them shooting at people. Yeah, this is what it looks like when you have a militarized police force. When you have too many police. When they don't know what lawful authority is. This is what it looks like. We've been building up for that for quite some time, and this country as well. You know, it was saw a rapid militarization of the police escalating under Obama. It began back in the 90s, and before the Rodney King riots in L.A. Yeah, Daryl Gates, who was the police chief there, he created the SWAT teams and other things like that. I've said many times, when you look at Terry Gilliam's Brazil, the SWAT team raids that happened in that were over-the-top satire, but that is now not even close to what is actually happening. It's like going back and looking at the 1960s The Prisoner by Patrick McGowan. What we have now is so much so much stronger, more pervasive, more dystopian. And so they set up that militarized police force, and Daryl Gates was criticized for that, then when the massive riots broke out in L.A. over Rodney King, they didn't do anything to create order or to protect anybody. They wouldn't protect the stores. You had the Korean grocers who got their firearms and stood on their buildings as a deterrent. But the police used their militarized weapons to protect themselves and City Hall. And then it escalated even more so with the war on drugs, because that was all tied in with the war on drugs. And then under Obama, you started having this massive buildup of putting MRAPs even in rural areas. And I said at the time, what they're doing is they're pre-positioning equipment for the civil war that they're planning. I said that back in 2013. And that's exactly what they've been doing. And now you've got Biden in, and he's going to escalate this into a civil war. This is happening worldwide. And you can look at this and say, well, you know, the Australians gave up their guns. They don't have any deterrence to these cops who can just go through and do whatever they wish. But in America, even though we have guns, the other side has been building up the militarized police force. If we looked at our police, it would be probably the second largest military in the world after our regular military. And the only thing stopping that are some constitutional sheriffs and law enforcement officers, in the minority, I'm afraid. So we're going to be talking to Sheriff Mack in the second hour. But just understand that when this comes to America, and it is coming to America, they're not going to win this. They don't win asymmetric wars. They've lost every asymmetric war that they've been involved in, and every war that we've had since World War II has been an asymmetric war. But they also kill a lot of people. It will be giga death when this comes to America, and these people want it to come to America. This is what it's going to look like when it comes. This is what it looks like in Australia now. Oh, and they're not nearly as armed as our police here in America. Das ist Melbourne, said the caption there. From Dictator Dan. Look at this. You get the idea. Streets filled with police. Thank you, Fuhrer Andrew. Danke. We could play a lot more of that, but you know what that looks like. Now, let me just say, you know, these guys are small-time amateurs compared to what we have in the United States, and they've been training in facilities. I went to one of them. I've watched, I've studied what they've said about asymmetric war. They began back in 2013, started having these war college scenarios where they said, yeah, we'll go down to Darlington, South Carolina, because those people in John Deere caps want to secede. They didn't say why. They would provide the justification later, you know, vaccine mandates, starving people with supply chain cuts and food, mass unemployment, starvation, shutting down our energy grid, all these things that they're doing. Yeah, we would just want to get out. Oh, no, we're not going to let you do that. Talking about how they were going to war game to take over the people who resisted. And they have facilities and military bases where they train for this. They have facilities where they train to fight us in rural areas, in suburban areas, and in urban areas. And this is not the kind of training where they would have always classically done, where they would go in and bomb an area, and then they would send the troops in, and they would clear the buildings one by one. You've seen those videos. I mean, the police do that as well with their SWAT teams, where they have guys on either side of the door, and they come in at different angles. You've seen that type of thing. This is not about that. I walked through one of these. And they have buildings, transportation areas, schools, and they're all intact, and they're American. I stood at the corner of First and Main and took pictures of that live. It's coming. They've been practicing for this for decades, just like they practiced for this pandemic. And so Damian Wilson, who writes for RT, said in Australia, the brutal response to lockdown protests, if that was happening anywhere else, the hypocritical politicians in Canberra, their capital, would be demanding sanctions. He said the world is watching in horror as COVID chaos unfolds on the streets down under with heavy-handed elite police piling in on lockdown protesters using an arsenal of weapons that would be the envy of any authoritarian regime, except our authoritarian regime in America. We have much better. The online images are all too familiar. Helmeted and masked police in body armor with batons held high, clubbing protesters, lying on the ground as incapacitating pepper smoke burns their eyes and chokes their breath. Meanwhile, mobs of rowdy protesters take over the streets, blocking traffic, disrupting the working week as they throw projectiles at police cars. Mayhem reigns. And now the mainstream media is saying that these are not real construction workers. They call them tradies. They said they all collectively went out to Kmart and bought their high-visibility vests yesterday. Well, that's nonsense. Where is this, they said? Burma? Hong Kong? Venezuela? No, it's my hometown of Melbourne, Australia. If the scenes from these three increasingly combative confrontations from the last 4 days were broadcast from any of the aforementioned nations, you would have the Australian Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, and his ministers be on their feet so quickly they'd have scorch marks on the seat of their trousers. as they denounce the overtop brutality on display against citizens exercising their democratic right to protest. There would be ministerial statements condemning the police action in the strongest terms. Instead, nothing. Hypocrisy is alive and well down under, which is starting to resemble a biotech police state more than the lucky country. He said the ink is not even dry on Morrison's signature on the new AUKUS security pack. But he stayed silent as Victorian state premier. Dan Andrews unleashed the public order response team in a lockdown-weary population. This crack unit of 300 officers from Victoria Police has an arsenal of weapons at its disposal to quell rowdy protesters. They have pepper balls fired from semi-automatic rifles. They have dye markers that can be shot at protesters so they can be identified and arrested later. They have a smorgasbord of non-lethal arms, including 40-millimeter launcher that fires hard squash ball-like projectiles, stinger grenades that can be rolled into a crowd and explode with light and smoke spraying 32-caliber rubber pellets and pepper canisters normally used to quash prison riots, because that's what this is. It's very appropriate. This is a prison riot. That's the best way to describe it. As I've said, when they let us out of lockdown, where did you first hear the term lockdown? Before it was used in schools commonly, before we turned our schools into prisons, lockdown was what happened when you had unrest in a prison. Then they started applying those to the schools. I said they're training the next generation to live in a police state when that was happening in the 80s and 90s. I couldn't believe it. But that's exactly what they were doing, exactly what they're doing now. And after they have locked us down and said you're going to stay locked down until we get this emergency vaccine ready, and then that's going to be the condition of you getting out. Except they haven't let us free. They haven't let us out. Even the people who have taken the vaccine. They continue to pull these measures back. They ease them up, put them on. Ease them up, put them on. They turn it on and off like a light switch. But the best analogy is parole. They'll give you temporary parole. And then without justification, they'll accuse you of having committed a crime. You somehow spread the new variant, the Delta farce that they tell everybody about. And then they lock you down. This is a prison world that they're creating right now. So the union there, the construction union, has accused its own members of being far-right Nazis. There you go. Goodwin's Law. Evidently, they're losing. Yesterday's protest outside the union headquarters in Victoria marked a watershed moment for the union and for the Labour Party, writes Rebel News. Thousands of construction workers rallied outside the CFMEU base, demanding to see the union boss, John Setka, after failing to protect members of Labour's mandatory vaccination order. In an extraordinary move, the union released an official statement blaming the protest on a mob of far-right Nazis instead of acknowledging the anger of thousands of construction workers. The union then turned the comment section off. Well, that's pretty common, isn't it? Same tactics we see from the Silicon Valley technocracy dictators. They turn off the comment section to prevent anyone from questioning the accusations that they laid out. Video footage from the day shows the vast majority were outraged union members. The press release said, "These are not the actions of people who care about their workmates and the construction industry." Starting from next week, any construction worker that has not begun the vaccination process will lose their job. Furious union members demanded to know what they had paid union dues for, as the Labour Party's health orders threaten their livelihoods. To understand, these are working class people who have always had trust in the unions to protect their jobs, trust in the Labour Party. You feel that knife in your back? Same thing Trump did. I said, you got to get behind somebody before you can stab them in the back. That's how they work this. Whether or not he supports it personally, the union, under Setka's direction, has done nothing to stop Labour leader Dan Andrews' health orders from putting thousands of union members' jobs at risk. This verbal scuffle over mandatory vaccination resulted in the crowd chanting, that Dan Andrews was the, let's just put it politely, the consort of Dan Andrews. Wysetka's coming out and flipping at them an up yours V sign as he stepped out of the building to address the crowd. That's a great way to start a speech if you want to reconcile the people, right? Tensions escalated as he asked the crowd if they wanted him to shut the whole construction industry down, to which they replied, shut it down, shut it down. Then they call Setka a sellout, a scabber, for allowing other construction workers to cross the picket line and take their jobs instead of standing up and fighting for the rights of all workers. At that point, Setka turned his back on the crowd and retreated into the building. This sparked furious workers to throw water bottles and attempt to follow him into the headquarters. Union officials were shown on camera viciously beating members of the crowd with a megaphone. That's like, yeah, that's, and then calling them Nazis. So over the weekend, you had the scenes that we showed on Monday. We had the Victoria police attacking journalists with pepper spray, knocking the 70-year-old woman to the ground. Then, as she's on the ground, the cop stops, bends down, and sprays her right in the face directly. So as you look at where this is happening now, as I point out, police conduct, this is, again, Rebel News, caused people to ask why they were observing a double standard for the union members. They said, wait a minute, you know, we saw how you treated the 70-year-old lady. You're being a little bit more deferential to the union members. You know why? Look at this video from this last week. Shot them in the face. They charged them. They charged them. Yeah. These are not 70-year-old ladies. These are construction workers.
Fuck you, cop dog!
And they just ran over those cops, knocking them to the ground. I mean, punching them. It's like, you got pepper spray? Yeah, well, we'll see about that. All right. So that's why. That's why. Yeah. Why don't you use the same heavy-handed tactics there? Well, they tried. Didn't work. Didn't work. You can easily knock down a 70-year-old lady, and you can then spray her in the face while she's on the ground. But you spray these guys in the face, and they charge you. Despite the protests swelling, as workers from nearby construction sites took their lunch breaks, arriving in their high-visibility vests, their boots, and their hard hats, some commentators continued to cling to the idea that this was some kind of a Nazi conspiracy. These commentators did not explain how a protest of this magnitude was organized, while dedicated social media task force was supposed to be monitoring the fringe far-right accounts. And I showed you the clip of a couple of cops showing up to a lady's house and saying, you posted something about attending a protest on such and such a day. You know, I just want to advise you. Blah, blah, blah. In other words, we don't have any free speech rights left here in this country anymore. You know, why are you filming me? You think I'm going to attack you? Oh, no, I guess you're just here to serve me notice that we don't have any human rights anymore. Predominant among those, free speech. So these union members have vowed to picket the union headquarters every day until the boss does something about these health orders. Labor figures have stepped forward. Labor politicians to defend the honor of the union. Do you see how this works? You got ex-labor leader Bill Shorten calling protesters professional troublemakers. There's a network of hard-right man-baby Nazis. Oh, that should calm things down. You call these guys man-baby Nazis. Oh, that's very conciliatory there. People who just want to cause trouble and complain about the vaccination. One of these cases where they're obviously throwing the bait out there. They want this fight right now. Otherwise, why would you come out there and start calling these guys man-baby Nazis? They really want this fight. As some people commented on the videos that I put up yesterday on BitChute, one person said their union accepted $20 million from the commie government to implement QR code scans at all the union building sites and agreed to enforce quaxines to work. He means vaccines. And the cops don't have little skulls on their caps, but they do have little alien predator heads on them. That's yesterday I put it up, the conversation between one of the construction workers and a cop, and the cop said, I agree with you. I understand. You know, my wife just lost her job, presumably because she wasn't vaccinated. He goes, but I got a job to do, and I'm going to come back and arrest you guys if you're still here. And he goes, well, why are you doing this? Well, I need a job. It's the only thing that I can do. And I played that clip, the British comedy team. Do you think we're the baddies? We've got little skulls on our heads. And he says, no, they don't have skulls on their head. They got little predator, alien predator heads on them. Another person then commented and said the construction workers are pathetic. They sat idly by and watched for a year. While they got paid, they didn't care until it came for them. Because the construction workers were still, they were considered to be essential. So they were still working. All these other people were losing their businesses, losing their jobs because they were non-essential. They watched old ladies being pushed down. Only when it came for them did they stand up. Guess what? Those very same construction workers helped to build those concentration camps that they have been applauding in the commercial media, mainstream media. It'd be ironic if they end up in them. I'm glad they're finally standing up, but don't give them the praise that you are. They don't deserve it. The only reason they're standing up is because it finally came for them. They were willing to watch it happen to others. Pathetic, pathetic, pathetic. At least be honest when covering them. I'm glad they woke up, but it's pathetic how long it took them. One person commented and said, and many have come out and publicly apologized for not supporting the others. Better late than never. And I agree with that comment there. Look, I'd like to see that cop who said, I'm just following orders because I need a job. He needs to change. And if he changes, then I would applaud him. These guys, again, it wasn't affecting them. They didn't do anything for the last year. But hopefully, it's not going to be too late. And when somebody switches and joins you, accept them and thank them for waking up, for standing on this. Even if they're not standing on principle, they are standing with you now. And so let's be honest about that. Let's not kick people out when we need allies. Because the thing that's going to win this, if we're going to win this without having massive bloodshed, it's going to be by overwhelming numbers of people. And you can see this even in the way the police interact with others. And the video clip that I showed yesterday, that one cop coming up, pointing a gun, he had a gun, the other guys were unarmed, pointing a gun at them and saying, move, move, move. And the guys said, F off. And one of the other guys who was kind of standing off to the side took a step over there and he sees, oh, you know, two people here, just one, me, by myself, even though I've got a gun. He backs off. The bottom, and the guys were just standing there with their arms folded. They didn't get violent with him, but they pushed him back just by the sheer numbers of their presence. And if we can build that and stand in resistance to that, you know, if instead of one guy standing in front of the tank like you had Tank Man at Tiananmen Square, if instead you've got a massive number of people, they can realize that they're not going to win this fight. Because even if they're armed, if there's enough people, they're going to lose. So we have this poster from, it's just a deterrence. And one of the ways that we can stop this is by not taking the bait and having a massive number of people who are going to stand together. Stand together, start living our lives, and make it clear that they are the aggressors. So they put the poster up, Victorian Workers Rally for Freedom. No vaccine mandates. We're going to meet every day at 10 a.m. at the union headquarters. They said the rally will continue until our demands are met. Bring your friends and family in support. Wear your work gear. Bring food and drinks. And so what is it? What is it that they are looking for? Well, these are their protest demands. And they're good. Number one, emergency state powers to be removed immediately. Lockdowns to end immediately. Mask mandate to end immediately. Vaccine mandates to end immediately. Vaccine passports to be removed. The immediate resignation of Dan Andrews, the premier. Immediate resignation of Brett Sutton, who is a CHO. It must be some kind of a health officer or something. Immediate resignation of Chief Commissioner Shane Patton. I think that's a police commissioner. Royal Commission into the government's response to the pandemic. charges laid out against officers for assaulting peaceful protesters. All construction sites to resume immediately. And then mass distribution of ivermectin, vitamin C, vitamin D, and zinc. Now, there's only one of these that is specific to their organization. I read 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 demands, and only one of them was specific to their jobs. This is why you should not single them out and say, you're not one of us. You had a job for this last year. They've come alongside of you. They want their jobs back, but all the rest of this stuff, the emergency lockdowns, the mask mandates, the vaccine passports, we want that stopped. We want these guys fired. We want an investigation of the police brutality as well as these health officers. And we want mass distribution of ivermectin, vitamin C, vitamin D, and zinc. That's exactly what we should all be demanding in every country of this world. We should be demanding this list. We'll have some different names to put in there for different politicians, bureaucrats, and traitorous law enforcement officers. So what happened yesterday? I showed you some of the stuff that happened this morning. Yesterday, there was a, let's see, we have it here. Yesterday, you had 20,000 people shutting down the Melbourne Highway. This is what this looks like. Look at that. Out in the middle of the road. This is the type of thing that is being done by Black Lives Matter. But, you know, this is a... I don't know how people are going to view this. You know, I hate being stuck in traffic like that. I hate having the roads shut down, and it's a dangerous thing to do. So I don't know if that's going to backfire on them or not. But everybody's been suffering, really suffering, in Melbourne, Australia for quite some time. And then it moved. Here's another look at what was happening.
Been going all day.
These are people on a bridge, a massive number of workers celebrating there.
The raging tradies and others targeted drivers stuck in gridlock and media covering their protest. But
yeah,
at this stage...
This is the media that's not sympathetic to them, sympathetic to the government.
No,
look what they do.
Into the city. And Mike, I think...
Again, when people lose everything, they lose it.
The workers first stopped.
As Gerald Slinty says,
hundreds of police arrived.
The highly trained tactical police moving into this situation.
But they were powerless to stop the masses as they marched back into the city in a frightening game of cat and mouse with the police. Cameron Bowe, 7 News.
Yeah, yeah. So they had their top groups out there, but they were powerless to do anything. Why? Because there's so many people. So many people. Take a look at this. Another angle. Look at all the people there. The cops are powerless to do anything about it. Even though they have thousands of police officers, more than they need. I've said this for a long time. You got a lot more cops than you need. Unless you are trying, or unless you are building up a force to suppress the population. And now we see that was exactly what they were doing with the police. So then they start shooting us. Of course. All right, so you get the idea. Authorities were forced to confront this blazing public anger as an extremely dangerous maneuver, marching onto a busy freeway, blocking traffic, a tactic that was used by the Black Lives Matter people this last summer. Footage circulating on social media showed protesters tossing glass bottles and flares. Some approached officers with their hands up, chanting, "You serve us." Organizers of the event, who mostly relied on the messaging app Telegram, said the Victorian Workers' Rally for Freedom, they organized that. They said it's going to be every day until we get something done about this. Protesters led by the construction workers shut down the major freeways. I showed you the pictures of that. It appears that we have, as one publication put it, vaccine impact, appears we have a bona fide revolution that is unfolding. Australia currently leads the world in medical tyranny as they have descended into total medical police state in the past several weeks, with authorities desperately trying to keep the COVID narrative alive by trying to track every single movement of their citizens. They've got QR codes put up on all the buildings. You've got to check in with them. Constantly report where you are to these people. This is why this is bubbling up. Now they're taking their jobs away. They just keep pushing and pushing and pushing. All right, you do this? Now I've got another thing for you. Now I've got another thing for you. This is not an emergency. This is not a reaction to a pandemic. They're adding these things on gradually to see what you will put up with. And these people are fed up with this now. And they're continue to push because they want a violent revolution where they can crack down even more on people. You got to show up in force, but not use force. That's a difficult thing. So they've been forced to stay in their homes. Can't go more than 3 miles away from your home unless the government gives you permission to leave and to go outside and to mandate the shots now to participate in society. So this is going to happen every single day. Protesters didn't even flinch in the face of the police threats. They were seen overrunning the police barricades earlier this week. As you see here, that's that clip again. Remember that? See, they shot them in the face with pepper spray, and that's when it all began, right there. And to top it all off, they've had a very large earthquake there. It was reported as a 5.8 on the Richter scale. Now they're saying it's a 6.0. And very uncommon in that area. Fortunately, it was not in the city of Melbourne, but it wasn't too far away. They did have a lot of damage in the small city where it happened. I wonder if they're going to have any construction workers to build the buildings that fell down back. You think? Do you think they care? Do you think they care? as I point out, it lasted about 30 or 40 seconds. It went on for quite some time. 6.0. Previous strongest quake recorded in the state was in May of 1966, a magnitude of 5.7. So they had one in 1989 that was 5.4, but this one is 6.0, and remember that is an exponential scale. When we come back, we're going to talk about food around the world, what is happening to our food supply. And guess what? It's all tied to climate change, renewable energy. Oh, it's a very, very bizarre twist as to what is happening with food now as they're looking for, you won't believe this, they got to have CO2 in order to make some of these things happen. I thought we had too much CO2. Well, yeah, be careful what you ask for. You just might get it. We'll be right back.
Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.
Hear news now at APSRadioNews.com or get the APS Radio app and never miss another story.
All right, we have in the UK an energy crisis that is creating a food crisis. Imagine that. You know, the climate change agenda has always been used to try to change everything, including what we eat, not just our transportation, our liberty, our housing, whether or not we have cars to be able to move around with, but also to control what we eat. And we're now getting, with this pandemic and the lockdown and the disruptions to our supply chain, we are now getting some of the things that they want to have happen, which means that we are not getting our cars, we're not getting many other things. But in the UK, it's taken on another dimension. They've had soaring natural gas prices because wind power has been failing for them. renewable. We were told it was renewable. We were told it was sustainable. You know what's renewable about it? You know what's sustainable about it? The tyranny that they want to institute. That is what is renewable. That is what is sustainable. It's not about energy being renewable and sustainable. It's about tyranny. So a fertilizer producer has now suspended operation at two UK plants because of soaring natural gas prices. Now remember, this is carbon dioxide. And I know you gotta think about this. We have reporters reporting on how the planet is going to die because of CO2. They just talk about it as being carbon, so then they start to get confused and they don't understand the difference between carbon dioxide and carbon monoxide. Carbon monoxide is the stuff that comes out of your tailpipe. If you shut the garage door, you want to commit suicide, you just turn the car on and that carbon monoxide will take you out. Carbon dioxide, on the other hand, is what we exhale, what all animals exhale, what plants need in order to produce food. So the plants take in the carbon dioxide that we exhale, and then they put off oxygen that we need to breathe in, and they also produce food. Isn't it amazing? It's almost like some engineer designed it, because God did. He's the best engineer. But we got to stop carbon dioxide. They just call it carbon. Well, they did stop the carbon. The shortage of carbon dioxide from these fertilizer plants. You see, they were using the carbon dioxide. Carbon dioxide is not bad. It's necessary. And not only that, but it was being used as a byproduct of this fertilizer producer. They were taking the carbon dioxide and it was being used to produce food. And so now the food supply is, they're looking at things like a shortage of turkeys and other things because they're not going to have fertilizer. They're also the UK food industry, stressed already from supply chain woes because they've been locking everything down, labor shortages because they've been firing people because they don't have a vaccine, even under more pressure now, the lack of carbon dioxide, the thing that Al Gore and his company and his co-conspirators have been working to remove from the planet. Now that very lack of that thing is causing food shortages. It's an important chemical that they use to stun chicken and pigs before slaughter. They use it for packaging to extend the shelf life. They have dry ice that keeps perishable items frozen during delivery. It is very essential in many different ways to the food supply chain. Again, they're going to have a shortage now of turkeys they're looking at for the holidays because they don't have enough CO2. One person said, we're talking between days and weeks from this really hitting hard, unless somewhere in the world, ideally in Europe, there are supplies of this that can replace that amount of CO2 very quickly. So, gentlemen, fire up your engines. Let's give them all the CO2 we can. The ripple effect continues, even for soft drinks. Oh, no. You're not going to be able to get your soft drinks there. The British Soft Drinks Association says the carbon dioxide situation could make everything go flat. Just as the tyranny is bubbling up. Imagine that. And so we have in the U.S. another tie to climate change being used to starve us. And this is the Biden administration developing a federal heat standard, they say, to protect vulnerable workers. Oh, give me a break. They're saying they're going to run this out through OSHA. They're saying that there's new rules coming out from OSHA, not just the vaccine mandates that are going to be enforced by OSHA. These are new rules to combat heat. Whenever the heat index is over 80 degrees Fahrenheit, if this applies, you're basically going to have about 2 months in Texas where you'll be able to work. You're going to shut everything down if the temperature is over 80 degrees Fahrenheit? Are you kidding me? A new rule to combat heat illness when the heat index is over 80 degrees Fahrenheit. Here's what a farmer had to say about this. She was in California, I think she says in the video. She's now moved to Tennessee to get away from the crazies. But she can't get away from the crazy feds because now they're putting this, you can't work if the temperature is over 80 degrees. Now, OSHA used to have mask mandates for industries where there really was a danger of particulates in the air, and people were required to wear the mask, but they had a caveat there that you couldn't wear that for more than 20 minutes because it would harm your health. They don't care about that anymore. And then OSHA is going to mandate vaccines out there. They don't care about your health in any way, shape, or form. But now they care about you working when it is more than 80 degrees. But they'll still suffocate you. Here's what she had to say.
I've told you again and again, this administration's agenda is to control the food and control the people. Biden wants to push OSHA into an extreme heat index for outside workers. You guys want to know what he thinks is hot? 80 degrees Fahrenheit. Let me tell you, here in Tennessee, it gets humid. And I push past because guess what? My girls still got to get fed, and that's my priority. And I chose this life in agriculture to feed you and your families. And they are trying to put fear in our lives. They're trying to kill off the American farmer. I know. We moved from California because regulations were getting so bad, and they were providing water to Los Angeles and San Francisco instead of the Central Valley. And they're doing it across America, trying to regulate our land, take our land, take our water rights. It is happening. It is time to wake up and start supporting your local farmers and buy local.
This is a plan to starve us. We will not be able to grow our own food. When she turned around and she said, I've got to take care of my girls, for those of you listening on a podcast, she turned around and shot this long barn that has cows. I guess they're dairy cows, perhaps. She's exactly right. They're doing everything they can to starve people of water, farmers of water. In places like Colorado, they have initiatives, and of course they're bringing that in California as well. In the name of animal welfare, you have to have a certain amount of livestock distancing, I guess we could call it. You know, certain square footage per area per animal that you're raising, which means that they're going to shut down bacon and a lot of other things to California. But the plan is to shut this down. They're going to shut it down either out of the out of concern for animal welfare, they say, or out of concern for the environment, or they're going to shut it down for whatever other reason. I guess the next thing they'll tell us is that the animals are spreading the virus, so we've got to euthanize them all and not grow anymore. One way or the other, they're going to take it down, and they're going to force you to buy lab meat from Bill Gates. That's the ultimate plan, folks. You're going to eat bugs. You're going to eat artificial lab meat designed by Bill Gates so he can make more money. He's going to outlaw his competition, which is natural, locally grown food, and force you to buy his lab meat. OSHA's rules come as the Biden administration has been making strides to protect workers and communities from extreme heat, says Newsweek. What a bunch of Soviet-level propaganda. Absolutely nonsense. So when you look at this, let me tell you, this is real 4D chess. I know Alex said that all the time about Trump. Trump is not playing 4D chess. He was playing you. But this is real 4D chess. Think about the four different elements of this. Here's the four dimensions of what Biden is doing with this OSHA rule. Number one, he wants to create a reason to hire more OSHA personnel, because they don't have enough people out there to mandate this vaccine and push people around and shut down businesses and shut down food. So you got to have more. You got to have a reason to have more OSHA people out there. Now, he's creating an army of 80,000 IRS agents to essentially lock us down with financial Stasi. They can do all kinds of harm. But he's got to have more OSHA agents since he decided to run this vaccine mandate through them. Number two, he's going to say, it's for their own health. I don't want you working in a situation where it's too hot. Of course, you're going to have to wear a mask all the time. But, hey, you know, I don't care if you can breathe or not. But 80 degrees? Are you kidding me? 80 degrees? I wish it was 80 degrees most days here in Texas. Only 80 degrees. The third thing is he ties us all into climate warming, right? And this global warming idea, if he pushes us out, that, well, now we have to have new rules from OSHA. Why? Because things are getting hotter than they ever were before. You know, 80 degrees. We never had 80-degree weather before. It must be global warming, and we must shut down food. And then the final thing is to shut off the food. So he's got four different things going on here, right? We've got to have more OSHA, more federal employees. We're going to do this to you for your health. This is all because of climate change and or the pandemic. You know, you got to get your vaccine from OSHA, you know, or OSHA's going to come get you. Or you got to shut everything down if it gets to be 80 degrees, but you better wear that mask. But the real intention is to shut off the food. That's his 4D chess. Biden, meanwhile, went to the UN, promises relentless diplomacy to skeptical allies. He tells them, hey, I'm not interested in going to war with China. He says, our greatest concerns cannot be solved by the force of arms. Bombs and bullets cannot defend against COVID-19 and future variants. You see what he's at war with? The vaccine war. The war against his own people. He doesn't care about Afghanistan. He wants these troops to be used against us. And he's in the middle of a military purge. Get the conservatives out. Get the Christians out. I want a military, even if it's smaller, it's going to be more than big enough to attack the United States, he thinks. Attack my own people. He goes on to tell the UN he's concerned about the merciless effects of climate change. Climate change, not the merciless effects of the lockdown. And as we see the lockdown rolling around and how it is damaging everything everywhere, even NPR has a story about how a single missing part can hold up a $5 million machine. And the headline says, an unleash industrial hell. Of course, that's the whole point. It's doing this everywhere. We have very, very complicated supply lines and infrastructure. Very, very complicated. And that makes it very, very fragile. There's a lot of connection points via transportation of all these different parts. Everything's become highly specialized. Everything is delivered just in time. So we can save money on the accounting books. So nobody is stockpiling much of anything. They're making it as they need it and then delivering it. So it's a very fragile system, easily broken anywhere. And that includes even the power supply, of course, because, again, when you look at how the renewable energy mandates of windmills have propagated through shutting down a fertilizer plant so they can't get food to the animals, you're not going to have the animals there, and all the other things that are used with the byproduct of that plant and the CO2. As they explain it to their audience, NPR, these people who haven't understood for the last 2 years nearly what happens when you start barking arbitrary orders about what is essential and non-essential, as began under the Trump administration, now continuing and extending under the Biden administration. Anyone who's ever tried to cook an elaborate dish only to be foiled by missing ingredients can appreciate what manufacturers are wrestling with a year and a half into the pandemic. Well, this is much worse than that. I mean, if you don't have that particular seasoning, you can still make your food. But that's not the case when you're doing cars. Acres of unfinished cars parked, waiting for semiconductors. The most visible example of widespread shortages. NPR is just now figuring this out. I've been reporting on this for over a year. Auto sales fell again last month because the chip shortage left car dealers with few vehicles to sell. Plastic products are also in short supply. I guess that's why the Democrats want to make it worse by taxing all plastic. Remember? Schumer and the rest of them, you know, it's part of this. They've got to raise trillions of dollars in taxes because they gave their buddies in big business trillions of dollars of bailout. So they throw the money, just like we talk about, they privatize the profits of big pharmaceutical companies, they socialize the losses, except in this particular case, if people get injured, they just ignore it. And even if they pay attention to it, there's no compensation in these programs. So you privatize the profits, you socialize the losses, or you just say, tough luck, you're not getting anything at all. And then when it comes to financial aid, all the financial aid goes to the big guys, and then they raise your taxes to pay for the debt and the deficit. Production at the Vermeer Company in Iowa has been limited for shortage of wiring harnesses and hydraulic components. That's a challenge for the company, which makes tree stump cutters and other equipment that's in heavy demand. And they don't say this in hurricane season. In years past, we'd say hurricane season, but they talk about Hurricane Ida, which is not an unusual thing. But we're going to personalize it to make it sound like it is an unusual thing. I grew up in Florida. Hurricane season is not an unusual thing. We have a shortage of pilots looming. as the next challenge for airlines, says Bloomberg. No, you got a shortage of people who are willing to take a genetic code injection created with cannibal medicine, created with aborted baby cell lines, created with aborted babies who were hunted down and killed and harvested alive. As you heard the testimony from one of these people, yeah, we took the parts out and, you know, it's all dismembered, but the heart was still beating. We want to get this stuff fresh, not frozen. We sent the head. We get this much for the head. We get this much for the other organs. Bounties paid by your government. Your government, the FDA, the NIH. And so these are the things that are being used to create these vaccines that will go through your body, putting in a spike protein that isn't exactly the thing that they're even saying that they're looking for. But how does it get turned off? Well, it doesn't. It doesn't in many, many cases, tens of thousands of cases. So a shortage of pilots, says Bloomberg, after thousands were laid off or decided to retire. See, it was their choice. They decided that they would take a layoff or retire. Vaccines, did that have anything to do with it? Well, further down the article, they say government policies such as mandatory vaccinations for trainee pilots and travel curbs have also kept a new batch of potential aviators away. Well, you know, these people are getting laid off. They notice they say they're not fired. Well, they're laid off. Maybe you quit. Maybe you weren't fired. Maybe we're not going to give you any unemployment. You know, we're not going to help you if you are crippled for life. We're not going to pay you any benefits to your family if you're killed by the vaccines. And then if you refuse to take the vaccine we're mandating, we're not going to give you any unemployment benefits. That's the games that they're running on us. Are you sick of this? I'm sick of it. We need to stand up against this. How much longer are we going to let them play us on this? Well, you know, when it comes to shortage of pilots, I'll just say these airlines, don't worry, because we won't be flying in your stinking airlines anyway. That's being banned to those of us who don't want to take the shot. So it'll all work out for you guys. I don't want to be cooped up in an airplane with a bunch of people shedding anyway. Does my mask protect me if nobody else is wearing one, writes the New York Times. See, they're still pushing this OCD thing. Should I wear the mask if all these other people around here, these horrible people, are trying to kill me? I showed you the pictures the other day of that lady in the airplane. The guy is sitting there eating a snack. He's got his mask off. And she's like trying to knock it out of his hand. Put your mask on. And she's all masked up. Everything but her eyes. And she's got a shield on her face. He says, go away. Get away. And she turns around with her back to him and her face to the side of the plane, huddling there, trying to save herself from this guy. So the New York Times feeds into this. This came out after that came out over the weekend. They're talking about this yesterday. If I'm the only person wearing a mask in a store or some other indoor location, am I really protected from infection? Your immune system protects you, or it doesn't. If you're in an airplane, unless you stop this guy from breathing, unless you strangle him, if he is breathing, these viral particles are going to get out one way or the other, especially with these masks. They're not going to stop it, these cloth masks. They're not going to stop any of that stuff. He's going to be on the plane, and you are going to be breathing whatever he is breathing out. So just get used to it. Get over your obsessive compulsive disorder. It's true, says the New York Times, that masks work best when everyone in the room is wearing one. That's because when an infected person wears a mask, a large percentage of their exhaled infection particles are trapped, stopping viral spread at the source. And when fewer viral particles are floating around the room, the masks others are wearing would likely block those that have escaped, and on. Total BS. I had somebody contact me because I've talked about this a lot of times, and I found this a little over a year ago. It was an Australian study that was done in 2002, before this all became a political football. And they pointed out to doctors and nurses, they said, well, first of all, only about half of the doctors and nurses bother to wear masks, even when it's a surgical situation. And so we did a study, and we found that even if you're wearing the N95 masks, after 20 minutes, they become so saturated with moisture. Of course, they're not going to stop the airborne particles. No, that's like setting up a hurricane fence to try to stop mosquitoes. It's not going to stop the viral particles that are airborne. And so, you know, it'll stop the ones that are in spittle. But they said after 20 minutes, the mask gets so saturated with spittle that that doesn't work either. Now you're just pushing it out with more force, smaller particles, using your N95 mask. I'm going to go over that again. I had that on my desk, and I didn't get to it one day, and now I've got to find it again. Just to remind everybody where that is, and I'll give everybody the link. I had at least one person write me and ask me about that. So I saw this article. It was on Twitter. Masks work best when everyone in the room has one on, but you'll still benefit from masking up, even though those around you are not, says the New York Times. And there's a great comment to that. One person commented and said, you forgot to include, quote, experts say. Now I can't trust that you're not lying to me because you didn't say experts say. Another quote underneath it, talking about the story that I had just before that, the airlines. Do you ever lie awake at night and think about how airlines spent 96% of that free cash flow they got on stock buybacks for a decade? Then 90,000 jobs being eliminated because people don't get the vaccine. We're going to be right back with, we don't have them yet? Okay. We're going to continue on with this then. Let me talk a little bit about what is happening at the border. As a matter of fact, we got a little bit of a clip about that.
Moving. Though they're disapproving, keep them doggies moving road. Don't try to understand them, just rope, throw, and brand them. Soon we'll be living high and wide. My heart's calculating, my true love will be waiting.
Those videos show the Border Patrol using their horses to push migrants back and using some aggressive tactics. Things like the agents swinging long reins and charging at the migrants, including children, are causing backlash. Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas is promising a full investigation into what happened, and he said it was unacceptable behavior. Others put the blame on a lack of resources, saying the agents have basically been asked to do an impossible job.
Hit them up! Move them out!
Get those doggies back on the other side of the river. Look, it is a chaotic mess. And who caused this chaotic mess? Is it the fault of the Border Patrol agents who are outnumbered by thousands of people that this is happening? These people have been lured into a situation, we've said this from the very beginning, a very dangerous situation, very dangerous crossing, putting themselves in many cases at the risk of human traffickers and other things to come into the country. Why? Because Biden and others are financially incentivizing this. They're inviting them in. They're rewarding them when they come. And then they're withholding the kinds of law enforcement that could keep this from being confrontational or keeping it even from being a contact situation. Look at what they did in Washington after a couple of dozen people got violent at the Capitol. They sealed the whole thing off. Immediately were able to put up barriers. They brought in troops, National Guard troops. They will never, ever protect the border. I said from the very beginning, when Trump got in office in 2017, I was criticizing him. I said, come on, you said you're going to stop the wars abroad? Stop the wars abroad. Stop the Afghan war, right? Bring the troops home. Bring the troops home from Iraq. Put them on the border. You can put up concertina wire. You can put up some concrete barriers. Just pull these things in and drop them down. But you can have the troops standing there as a deterrent. If they're standing there and you got concertina wire, they're not going to come across that. You don't have suicide bombers like you did at the Kabul airport. And yet they were able to put up those temporary measures there at the Kabul airport, which did not work against suicide bombers, especially because they told people to stand down. But they put up temporary measures in the Capitol building very quickly, brought in thousands of troops very quickly. But instead, they leave a handful of border agents there on horses because they want chaos. They want the chaos. And so now you have the virtue signaling from the Biden administration, Mayorkas, as Information Liberation points out, saying the same thing I was saying. Mayorkas would have preferred it if those Border Patrol agents were working undercover at the Justice for J6 rally, spying on Americans rather than trying to protect us from an invasion at our border, the chaos. And again, as we're talking about the fact you can't fly into this country without your vaccines and all the rest of the stuff, and yet they are flying people in, even from Afghanistan. But they're not whipping people with horse reins. You had some activists who were claiming that AOC, occasional cortex, immigration should not be a crime. Yeah, not being vaccinated, that's the only crime, right? Earning money, having private property, those are crimes to AOC and the squad. And, of course, they also don't think that it's a crime if you're engaged in corruption with the Chinese government either. Remember 10 for the big guy, 10% for Joe Biden, the emails from his son, Hunter, that were found on the laptop. You know, it's pretty amazing, isn't it, that Trump was unable, or unwilling, I should say, to use that smoking gun. They sat on it for a long time, then they didn't do anything with it. And now even Politico is confirming that those emails are legitimate. What it confirms is that they've confirmed, essentially, that the emails are legitimate and that Biden is not legitimate. News of Hunter Biden's laptop was broken by the New York Post shortly before the 2020 election. And it was, even though all this smoking laptop fell into the lap of the Trump administration, it had been around for quite some time. They did absolutely nothing with it. And you had, in this story from Zero Hedge, they collect a lot of headlines from all the mainstream media, saying, even from the New York, National Public Radio, NPR, saying, we're not even going to report on this. We're not even going to give it the dignity of reporting on it. See, there's some crimes that they don't care about and other things that are not crimes that they're going to crunch and create a revolution. When we look at where this is headed, this is really about surveillance as well. That's a key part of this. Key part of the police state has always been surveillance. And now we have in-car cameras. Eric Peters and I have been telling you about this for a long, long time. Every time I have him on, we talk about how they're going to use all these electronic devices that make the cars very expensive and unaffordable. They're going to use these things to surveil you. Researchers at the Fraunhofer Institute have now developed a smart car camera system that can, quote, figure out exactly what a driver is doing, according to Gizmodo. They're very excited about this. Already, the camera is being positioned as, quote, a potentially improving the safety of semi-autonomous driving features, a feature that could help drivers in semi-autonomous vehicles pay attention to the road. The system can determine things like when the driver is sipping a cup of coffee, looking at their phone, adjusting the radio dial. You want that, right? Didn't you want that? Didn't you want to have Big Brother sitting in there, or the nanny state sitting in the car with you, monitoring everything that you're doing? Notifying the police, notifying the insurance company so they can charge you as you're going down the road, everything that you do. The vehicle can make a determination if the driver is paying attention. And they can determine how distracted you are. This is not something, by the way, that's coming out in the future. It's already rolled out by Amazon in many different locations. Amazon delivery trucks now have AI cameras, and they are already punishing drivers for mistakes that they didn't make. This is Vice talking about this. You see, it wasn't a conspiracy theory. It was just an extrapolation of the way these people have always operated. This is what it looks like in an Amazon delivery vehicle. Derek, a delivery driver at the facility, said the camera in his van started to incorrectly penalize him whenever cars cut him off at everyday occurrences in L.A. traffic. It would come on and say, maintain safe distance. He said, every time I needed to make a right turn, it inevitably happened. Car cuts me off, moves into my lane, and the camera, in this really dystopian, dark, robotic voice, shouts at me. It's so disconcerting, it's upsetting when I didn't do anything. Now, this would be annoying enough if it was just nagging you, but it's not. It's a little snitch. In February, Amazon announced that it would install cameras made by the AI tech startup called Netradyne. I think we should call it Sky Netradyne. And it's Amazon-branded delivery vans as an innovation to keep drivers safe. See? Tyranny always comes to you wrapped up and labeled as safety. So it said at the end of the month, Amazon had fitted more than half of its delivery fleet nationwide with this technology. They said the Skynetrodyne, I'll call them, cameras, regularly punish drivers for so-called events that are beyond their control or events that don't constitute unsafe driving. Punishes them for looking in the side mirror, for fiddling with the radio, for stopping ahead of a stop sign at a blind intersection. The Netrodyne camera, which requires Amazon drivers to sign consent forms to release their biometric data, has four lenses that record drivers when they detect events, such as following too closely, not stopping the way that it wants you to stop at a stop sign, streetlight violations, distracted driving, and so forth. They said most false positives we get are at stop sign violations. By the way, I get most of the cops do the same thing as this. Is that either you stop after the stop sign so we can see around a bush or a tree, and it dings us for that, or it catches a yield sign as if it were a stop sign. Yeah, human cops do that the same. But they have a scorecard that they keep on that, and it is essential. It's kind of like the thing that makes it or breaks it for these companies, because remember, Amazon has kind of farmed this out like Uber drivers. And if it ruins this scorecard, you don't get a bonus. And isn't that convenient for Jeff Bezos? It said Amazon delivery companies must register less than 5 distraction events per 100 delivery routes. Most drivers at my company cover the cameras up with stickers because the cameras get to be a nuisance. They ping all day. People get horrible scores, but it's all a lie. They didn't do anything bad. It's impossible to stop at stop signs every time in the way that they want you to do it. So covering them up is the way that they're coping with this for right now. And that's as they're going to be putting in breathalyzers in cars, I guarantee you, I'm not in the market for a new car, but if I were to buy a new car, can you imagine what's going to, the average cost of cars now are north of $30,000. They're going to get it north of $40,000, $50,000, whatever it is. I mean, if you were to buy one of these things, I'd have to factor in the cost of removing the breathalyzer, the airbags, and the rest of the stuff. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to be right back with Sheriff Mack of the Constitutional Sheriff's Association and peace officers. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. Is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.
Elvis.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Beatles.
And the sweet sounds of Motown. Find them on the Oldies channel at APSradio.com.
All right, and joining us now is Sheriff Mack of the Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association. That is CSPOA. Their website is CSPOA.org, CSPOA.org. And I wanted to get Sheriff Mack on because as we look at what is happening, things have obviously gone too far at the federal level. At many state levels, it's gone too far. Our best hope, as I've been saying for the longest time, are local officials. And the best hope of the local officials are the sheriffs. So we need to have sheriffs who understand what legitimate authority is, who are going to stand with the people, who are accountable to the people because they're elected by them. And this is a very important time. But we also have a lot of sheriffs and law enforcement officers who are being leaned on by the state as well. So they're also in the crosshair. So joining us now is Sheriff Mack. Thank you for joining us, Sheriff.
David, it's always great to be with you. Thank you so much for having me. And yes, there's never been a greater need for constitutional sheriffs than there is right now.
Yes, yes. Tell us, first of all, before we get into some of the things that sheriffs can do and the ways that people can interact appropriately with their sheriffs and support them and find good candidates and so forth, let's talk, first of all, about these mandates. What's going on with the mandates? Because we've got a lot of people who are Washington State, for example. A lot of the people who are highway patrol, they're being kicked out left and right. They don't want anybody who has any religious, sincerely held religious beliefs. They don't want anybody who's going to stand with the Constitution. So what is happening with the people that you're in contact with these vaccine mandates?
Well, it's been kind of astonishing that now the police are the ones being oppressed and abused by our own government. And maybe this is a roundabout backdoor approach to get rid of the police that many of them have been trying to do, defund the police and so on. Even in Minneapolis, the people do not support getting rid of the police. All of them seem to be supporting police reform. Well, you and I have been preaching about police reform for decades, and I agree. The police need to be properly trained in their oath of office, and sure. We at the CSPOA do exactly that. We believe that we have forgotten, not just the police, but all of us in America have forgotten to put liberty first.
That's right.
And that liberty is supposed to be first in the judicial branch, the executive branch, and the legislative branch. We all have the same purpose. Although we are in different lanes and different assignments, we all have the same purpose, and that is to safeguard liberty and protect civil rights. And so many have forgotten that. And we still hear from sheriffs that claim they don't have the authority to keep their oath of office, which I find astonishing. Now, some of them will even say that way. Some of them will say it in a different way that, oh, I can't interpose. I can't stop FBI agents or IRS agents from committing crimes in my county against American citizens. We're too busy trying to stop the drug problem. And I don't have the jurisdiction to tell the FBI or FDA or EPA that they can't come in and abuse citizens. You know, I just don't have that authority. It's ridiculous. It doesn't matter who's committing the crime. It matters what is happening. And the American people deserve and must have a place to go, an alternative, a place to turn for peace, safety, and liberty when they're being abused by government.
Absolutely.
And
right.
I'm sorry, but that mantle falls on the shoulders of the sheriff, as you alluded to. He is the only elected law enforcement officer in the country.
That's right. Yeah, you got to hand it to the John Birch Society. I mean, going back probably the 1960s, the support your local sheriff, you saw that everywhere. It became a joke. It became a tagline. I think there was a James Garner movie, Support Your Local Sheriff. But they had it right, and they could identify 60 years ago. They saw what was happening. They saw this consolidation, this centralization that was happening in all aspects of our life, all aspects of government, but they saw how dangerous that would be when law enforcement was centralized and consolidated. And so they were pushing for the support of local sheriffs. But we've seen this, Sheriff Mack, historically. You look at situations where the Supreme Court, the Dred Scott decision, said, and I mentioned this the other day, if you have an escaped slave, they have to be returned. And they sent federal agents to some of the states in the north, one in particular in Wisconsin. When they sent the federal agents in to arrest the slave, the local law enforcement arrested the federal agents instead. And so, you know, that is where the rubber meets the road, right, is at the local level. And that's really where we can have a peaceful nullification of those who are overstepping the powers that they've been given. And as you pointed out, you mentioned the term in your lane. All these different jurisdictions and different branches of government have their own lane. They have their own sphere of authority. And when we align everything into this consolidated top-down pyramid structure, that's not the structure that we have in our Constitution, and that's not the structure we want either. And that's why it's so important to have local law enforcement that's going to stand in the gap and not enforce these unconstitutional laws, but also defend us when federal agents come in. That's part of nullification.
Well, it is, and it's part of our job. We promised to uphold and defend and protect first of all, uphold and defend the Constitution, protect and serve the people. And so now I always get complaints from sheriffs and cops that I teach law enforcement to pick and choose which laws to enforce. No, I don't. That's an absolute falsehood. I teach sheriffs to follow the Constitution.
Yeah, so I picked. That's why I made the choices for you, right?
Well, yeah, exactly. And that, I'm glad you said that, because the argument about picking and choosing which laws to enforce and uphold and defend was over the day you took your oath.
Yes.
You promised to uphold and defend the Constitution, not traffic laws. That's not what you swore to do.
That's right.
You did not swear an oath to make sure you put all the drug dealers in prison, all the drug users in prison. What you swore to do was perpetuate the Constitution of the United States. Your oath of allegiance is to the Constitution, is to the American people, is to the principles of liberty upon which America was founded. And now we've gone to all this police, SWAT, shoot 'em up, tasers, and all this other equipment, and everybody wants their own SWAT team. Even if you're the smallest department in your county, everybody wants to be like TV and SWAT and John Wayne and Clint Eastwood. And you know what? We need to get off of that and get back to reality and say, my job is to protect the American people from all enemies, both foreign and domestic. And how is it that we allow the IRS to come into our communities and destroy lives, confiscate bank accounts, destroy families, and take away the businesses from people that have had these in their families for sometimes decades and even longer, where family businesses are being destroyed, just like the USDA and FDA and EPA do to farmers and ranchers across America, and I'll add the Forest Service and Bureau of Land Management, that they destroy families and family businesses, and exponentially this is happening to farmers and ranchers.
Yes.
And yeah. and to fit into everything that we've been talking about, I want to read this is what the Chicago Order of Fraternal Order of Police, and they're usually a very liberal organization. Listen to what the president of the Chicago Fraternal Order of Police said about the vaccine mandates that are being mandated by one Mr. Joe Biden. So this guy's talking about these, what you brought up at the beginning of the show, the vaccine mandates and COVID-19 mandates. This vaccine has no studies for long-term side effects or consequences. None, he said. Yeah. To mandate anybody to get that vaccine without that data as a baseline, amongst other things, is a hell no for us. Good. And that's the Chicago police telling Good. That to the president and to their mayor and to the governor. And I actually think he was saying that to the mayor. But the mayor is in line with Mr. Biden, and that's where all this is coming from.
That's right.
We have 230 peace officers in Tucson that have refused to take the vaccine. And now they're being threatened with punishment, discipline, termination, and their families are beside themselves. And now they're looking for answers and they're looking for peaceful solutions. And this government is so run amok and tyrannical. And this, it boils down to this, David. I want to ask the American people, I want to ask every school board member, especially those of you who have families, children, grandchildren, which message do you want to go out to your children? Which message do you want your children to learn? Okay, from school boards especially, because they're in charge of teaching. But if you're a sheriff or a cop or a city council member, if you're a mayor or a governor or the president, if you have children and grandchildren, which message do you want to go? There's two of them. First, this message. Government can do anything to you that it wants, as long as there's an emergency or a crisis. We can shut down the Constitution. We can shut down your businesses. We can stop all church and worship services. We can force you and arrest you if you're not wearing a diaper on your face. This is what government is for. It is to take care of you and even force you to take care of yourself if we have to. Or would you prefer leadership like this? Yes, we're living in some pretty hard times. We have some diseases that we have not been able to come to grips with. But we will do that together with the American spirit of liberty maintained. We're not going to trample upon or destroy the civil rights that Martin Luther King fought and died for. We're not going to destroy the individual God-given rights of the American people. We're not going to do it. Which message do you want, liberty or the force of tyranny?
Absolutely. That, and we've had that message. We've been talking about that for quite some time for the last year. And the things that we've seen, Sheriff Mack, are in the places where people were able to enjoy some freedom. It typically happened, in Illinois, at the very beginning of this. I talked to a pastor at the very beginning of this, when almost everybody was locked down in a small town. There was a pastor who was meeting. And again, you know, it's not just in Chicago where Lori Lightfoot is. It's Governor Pritzker of Illinois who was really after everybody. And he was telling everybody, you shut down, you're not going to go to church. Well, they held church there. And he said, and the sheriff showed up. And they weren't there to take down license plates so they could find people. They weren't there to shut it down. He said they were there to protect us from state officers that might try to shut us down, because he said the sheriff here is a member of the church. And that's the thing. It's the community. And that's what's happening right now, is the government saw that. They saw that the places where they were not able to extend their tentacles of tyranny were the places where they had sheriffs who had connections to the local community, and where they would stand with these people. Another sheriff that I've talked to many times in Arizona, in a border town, he won the election because in a crowded field, to replace a sheriff that had been there for a very long time, in a crowded field, he said he was the only one who said, I'm not going to force masks on people. That's going to be your individual decision as to what you want to do, whether you want to wear a mask or not. And he was vilified by the press, but they got like 200 comments on this small paper that nobody ever comments on, everybody in favor of him. And he easily won it in a crowded field in the first round because people wanted to have liberty and have choice. And this is a guy who has lived in that community all of his life, and family has been there for multiple generations. That's the core thing that we need to get back to, that strength in our community, knowing people and standing with people, instead of a distant government that's just going to see you as a widget to be controlled and to be fined, isn't it?
It is. And the constitutional sheriffs that we have going on are absolutely what's making a huge comeback for our Constitution today. The constitutional sheriff. So I have a letter in my hand from a constitutional sheriff in Eureka County, Nevada. Now, Nevada's been pretty hot. They're on a roll there. They have four or five different counties that have declared themselves to be constitutional counties, and they have even more sheriffs that have declared themselves to be constitutional sheriffs who will not back down and allow tyranny to roll through their counties, no matter where it comes from, state or federal. And so this Sheriff J.J. Watts good friend of mine, kind of a young sheriff, very articulate when he writes a letter to the president that I have here in my hand.
Yeah,
and he's telling, are we going to a break? Or we
no,
got
no, time? I was going to say, no, we don't have, it's a podcast. We don't have to worry about that anymore. That's the good news.
Okay,
no,
good.
I'm sorry, I just chimed in and said, yeah, let's hear that letter. I want to hear that.
Okay. So he's saying, President Biden, I write you today on Patriots Day, which is September 11th. And then he says, the Constitution of the United States does not give any president the authority to make vaccines mandatory nationwide by executive order. An executive order is not a law. Laws are passed by the legislative branch, not the executive branch. I like how he's giving him a little instruction on the Constitution there. So then he goes on. With that being said, as duly elected sheriff of Eureka County, I will not be enforcing the federal vaccine mandate you issued this week. This mandate is a violation of your oath of office and beyond the scope of your authority granted to you under the Constitution of the United States of America. And then he reminds the president about the 10th Amendment. And you know, I know a little bit about the 10th Amendment.
Oh, yeah.
And then he talks about mask mandates and how he will not enforce that. And then he says, therefore, no agent of any government agency has the authority in Eureka County to enforce a mandate or any regulation that has been put in place to date by the federal or state government, to include masks or vaccines or any other mandate that has not been passed by a legislative branch with a shall clause. And then I love this condition he puts on that complies with the Constitution of the state of Nevada or of the United States of America.
That's right.
So he's saying two different things. One, Mr. President, you do not have the authority to do this. You're not the legislative branch. An executive order is not a law. And then he tells him, even if the legislative branch passes it and it doesn't comply with the state of Nevada Constitution or the U.S. Constitution, we're not going to do it either. So you got to love this guy, Sheriff J.J. Watts. Love him, absolutely love him. And he even goes on to tell the president that I am including a pocket-sized constitution so that you can read that before you do stuff.
That's great. Yeah, that's the key thing. And that's the discussions that we're having in a lot of Christian circles right now. Do we obey everything that comes to us because somebody's got a title or they got a uniform or they got both or they're called an expert by the press? Do we obey everything that anybody tells us to do? Or do we sit here and say, well, wait a minute, where are the lines of authority on this? Am I underneath you? Am I subject to what you have to say? Are you subject to the higher law that you swore to obey that became a condition of your office? When we look at how this is going to roll out, Sheriff Mack, I mean, they don't have the people in OSHA to do this. We had the 10th Amendment Center guy who said, do you realize that they've already talked about how they don't have enough people in OSHA? They need to have more people in OSHA. Because if we were to go around and inspect different businesses one-on-one, it would take us 160 years to go around and inspect all these businesses with the people that we have. Well, that's good. I'm glad that they don't have enough agents that they can harass everybody on a regular basis. But they don't have the people to go do this. So it will not be run, really, through OSHA. It will not be run even through the state officers, and for the most part. It'll be run through local officials who are going to be the ones that are going to enforce this. And the sheriff would be the one who would do this. So the sheriff can be your worst enemy or your best friend. Because that's really where the rubber is going to meet the road. We've had situations in New York where even though the city council, the mayor, the sheriff were all against these businessmen, you might remember it, these guys were having a meeting in one of the businesses. They were not even violating the rules in terms of the number of people that were in a building, and the law enforcement showed up to harass them. And they said, get out of here. You don't have any authority to be here. We're not even violating your new claimed authority, which you don't have. And so they sent him a $15,000 fine, and he ripped it up live on the air on Fox News. You might remember that. And then to protect him, it came from the office of the comptroller there in that local area, and that person, who was the one responsible for collecting the fines, said, well, okay, he couldn't remove the fine, but he said, I'll give you 150 years to pay it. How about that? So basically what he did was he nullified the fine, and that's what we're talking about. You can nullify in so many different areas. A jury can nullify bad laws. Right. But it's very, very important to have a sheriff that's there because they've got the force to do that. So how do we identify and stand with these sheriffs? I know you got some materials about that at CSPOA.org.
Well, we do. We have the entire vetting process available for people. We have a survey for sheriffs that you can take with you and talk to the sheriff about. But as you're alluding to here, it's vital for the American people in their county to have a relationship with their sheriff. And obviously your sheriff can't be doing what everybody tells him every day, you know, the thousands of people that he is serving. But be that as it may, that is still exactly what he has to do. He is there to serve every citizen, whether they voted for him or not, whether they're even registered to vote or not. He is there to take care of them. He is there to protect their liberty. And so as a group of people in your freedom group or your neighborhood, you should be emailing your sheriff. You should be going in to see your sheriff. You should be volunteering to be on the posse of your sheriff. If he doesn't have one, then you need to start helping him get one. And is it vital that the sheriff have a posse? Pretty much so, yes. Mm-hmm. Is he required by law to have a posse? No, but it is his prerogative to have one. And he can have it work however he wants. How extensive it goes is totally up to him. But that you have an emergency organization within the community, and that the community is organized to be part of keeping the peace with the sheriff. Because there are times in emergencies, especially natural disasters, where you need the people organized, and that you not wait on the governor and not depend on the governor or the president to send FEMA in to take care of you, that you already have your county so organized that you're taking care of yourselves, and that you're not becoming a subject to the governor or the president to take care of you.
Let's talk a little bit about the kind of the nuts and bolts of this kind of relationship, because I know a lot of people, their only interaction with the police is when they're being given a ticket or some other things, or they're being intimidated or harassed. And so that puts a lot of people off. You know, they don't necessarily get a warm, fuzzy feeling when they see a police car following them. Right. And so they're intimidated, and they're not, they don't really even know. They don't know any police officers or law enforcement officers. So they're not really, don't really know how to approach these guys without making it seem like they're a troublemaker, or they don't want to get put on a list or what. What's the appropriate way to start to create a relationship with somebody like that? Is it to approach them individually, to put together an association and say, you know, we're here as representatives of association? Or what is the best way to start to have that personal relationship? Because they are persons, and we need to personalize ourselves in the community, and we need to personalize these guys in the uniforms as well. That's the key thing, is that separation. How do we bridge that?
Well, doing it in a friendly way is the first way, and it can be individually or association. I like the association thing better because it shows that the sheriff and his staff that there's a lot of people part of this. Mm-hmm. And you want to break the ice, you know, bring in a plate of cookies. Bring in something for the staff to snack on. I don't know a police department or sheriff's office that doesn't like that.
Even donuts. Now, with some donuts, maybe.
Yeah,
maybe not that.
as stereotypical as that is, yes, that's okay too.
Okay, all right.
But really, folks, bring in something. Be friendly, and get to know the sheriff. But then ask the tough questions. Ask the sheriff. Plain and simply, do you consider yourself a constitutional sheriff? And if you do, how is it that you are a constitutional sheriff? What are you doing to be constitutional? And what are you doing? Do you have any type of system in your office? Do you have a plan to do something to prevent confiscation of guns?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Biden is saying he wants to do that. What will you do if they come in your county to try to take guns away from law-abiding citizens? Again, you can ask the same thing. What will you do to protect us from forced vaccinations?
That's right.
And then see what he says. What
will
you do?
That's a good way to, we got a lot of different issues that we can approach somebody on. I do think, you know, as you're talking about, be friendly, you know, have a peace offering with all this stuff.
Yes,
come in
yes.
with a group, you know, you got several people that are involved. I don't know, you know, maybe it's a neighborhood watch group that you, you know, have put together, several people in the neighborhood, so you got a title
right.
and you represent several people because they are up for election. So you make a peace offer, you try to establish a little bit of rapport, and then instead of giving them a long list of questionnaires, maybe about, you know, what is your position on the 10th Amendment or something like, you make it personal about some of these issues, and we got so many of them right now, the vaccine mandates, the mask mandates, the impending guns. But I think it probably the best place to start would be the vaccine and mask mandates. You know, where do you stand on these health orders, and where are we going to, you know, what is your position on this? We'd just like to know, you know, and make it kind of a non-confrontational thing there. Later on, you can pull in some things like firearms, and you can pull in the Constitution.
Right.
You need to go there. But I think maybe, you know, the thing that is on everybody's mind right now is the mask and the vaccine mandate. That's a legitimate question that everybody's going to have. You go there as representative of your neighborhood association or something like that, maybe you and a few other people. I think that would work. And you need to start to establish that rapport at the local level. It's very difficult. I talk about national and international news because we need to understand where this whole thing is coming from and where it's going. And we need to understand that it is a global agenda, but it has to be implemented on a local level. And that's why you got to make these kind of contacts.
Yeah, it is. And if you go in about the mask and vaccine, I mean, obviously everybody's thinking about that, and police are very concerned about that.
Yes.
But then make sure that you pin him down on a few key issues like those, and then suggest that we could actually have Sheriff Mack or someone else from his organization come in and do a one-day seminar about the ethics that he has, teaching the ethical application of the oath of office, or the Constitution for law enforcement. We actually, it's the same class, but we give it different titles. And we've even had this class certified by a lot of state bureaucracies that oversee law enforcement qualifications for cops. Every police officer in this country must continue to be certified with 40 hours of training every year. If you don't keep up that training, you could lose your certification as a cop and you won't be able to keep that job. So the requirements are, and I'm not talking about this is all good and yes, we should all have this bureaucracy overseeing. I'm just saying this is what reality is. And our training has been approved in Texas and South Carolina and Virginia, several other states, and we're trying to get it approved in others. Where we're headed this weekend, I'm going back to Virginia, and I've got 3 or 4 days there where we're having training, and then Maryland after that, and Pennsylvania after that. And let me tell you, David Knight, the sheriffs in Texas are on fire with this stuff, and they are becoming constitutional sheriffs by the dozens there. And in fact, we've already got really close to 125 out of the 254 sheriffs in Texas that will be trained by the CSPOA by the end of October.
Oh, that's great.
And so we've already done about 5 or 6 there. We had our national convention in the Woodlands right outside Houston in February, where a lot of this started. And Sheriff Randy Hargrove in Crockett, he said, quote, "This CSPOA training is an American constitutional revival."
That's great.
And that's exactly what's happening. And I will promise people this. Your involvement in this is essential. If your sheriff hears from you, and he knows what you want him to be regarding the Constitution and the protector thereof, he is more likely to do it for you than he is for me. When sheriffs get involved, it's because they tell us their constituents have told them to get involved. And many of their constituents have paid their way to get to our conferences, so they don't have to take it out of their department budget. And some sheriffs have objected to that. No, I don't take money from the public. Well, the public can just give it to us.
Yeah.
And all of you can become members of the CSPOA. This is, you know, the name of it sounds like, oh, well, that's just for sheriffs or former sheriffs or cops. This is an American people organization, and it won't work without the American people involved. And it is a partnership between you and your sheriff. You have to be involved. We have a posse membership at CSPOA.org that you can join. All of you can donate to this. Let me ask you, do you want a constitutional sheriff in your county?
Oh, yeah.
Then get involved with it. Yeah. Get involved. Let's do it. We're taking back America right now. Want me to tell you how? Peacefully and effectively, county by county, state by state. Even if the state doesn't go along, we can still do it county by county. David, a miracle just happened a couple of weeks ago. Cattaraugus County in New York voted unanimously, and they have 17 county legislators on their legislative council. 17 is like 17 county commissioners. They have 17. Even the Democrat voted with the Republican. There's one Democrat. They all voted unanimously to be a constitutional county. Why? Because they said the people of this county deserve liberty and deserve to be protected. Oh, there you
great.
Have it.
That's great. Yeah, we've talked about this. You and I have talked about this for many years.
Yeah.
We talked about the directions that we're going and how law enforcement was being retrained by federal law enforcement to do things like a shoot first curriculum. That's what they started doing in a lot of different places. We saw the effects of that. So they can, you know, training is core to all of this. And so that's why CSPOA is very important. And you mentioned the posse and how people can be a part of that. And of course, the posse is really, you know, posse comitatus is the power of the community. Everybody knows, because it's been made famous in the Westerns, how there'll be a sheriff and maybe one or two deputies. They are professionals. They do it all the time. And then when there's an emergency, they grab everybody in the area. That's their posse, the power of the community. They all come with their firearms that they have under the Second Amendment, their right of self-defense. And they may not be as expert with the use of a weapon or the tactics that need to be done, but it's that mass of people. And we can see how a mass of people can be used, even if they're not armed, a mass of people can be a very intimidating thing to tyranny or to other types of crime. So you can have a mass of people, and if they're, you know, holding firearms or something like that under the orders of the sheriff, that is a very important thing. We haven't gotten to that point yet, but boy, these people are really pushing in so many different ways. So it's very important to stand with the sheriff, to identify people. And if you got a sheriff who is going to basically, you know, shove you off to the side, doesn't want to talk to you about the Constitution, doesn't want to talk to organizations of neighborhoods, that's important to know as well. And to start trying to find and identify somebody that you can support in the next election that's going to be that way. So all of this is a way, you know, we got to get involved at the local level. That's not something I can do. I can only lay out where the problems are, what the plans are, how these things are unfolding. But it's got to be stopped in each and every one of these different communities. That's the key thing. And I think the sheriffs and law enforcement are now seeing it. It's happening to them. This is no longer a theory. It is rolling out, unfortunately, everywhere, and it is escalating very quickly. And so I think that's one of the reasons why you're starting to get this kind of reception, Sheriff Mack, because when people have their liberty taken away, we've always had the people who have lived in communist bloc countries or something like that. They can smell this stuff coming from a mile away, and they've lived under that. They know what it looks like. They don't want to ever be there again. And now, over this last nearly 2 years, we've been living under that, seeing what is coming next. And I think people are hungry for an alternative. I think that's why the time is ripe for people to start to get involved in their local community, especially with the sheriffs.
Yeah, it is. And like I said at the beginning, There's never been a greater time that we need the constitutional sheriff in this country.
Yes.
And that solution really is in the hands of the American people. He works for you. You're the one that appoints him. You're the one that can give him direction. He has no other supervisor. The sheriff reports only to the people of his county. Mm-hmm. That's why we are a constitutional republic. That is what makes us a constitutional republic. It is the people that are in charge, and a republic is what the people own. And in this American republic, we have a rule book that is the parameters for the enforcement of law, and that is our Constitution. So it's a great plan. It's a great country. It's a great system. And we need to implement this now and make sure that the American people are part of the solution, or this solution will not work.
That's right. And I just want to, Travis reminded me when I was talking about the Arizona sheriff, I've had him on a couple of times. David Hathaway was his name. Great guy.
He's from Nogales area. Mm-hmm. Great sheriff.
Yes.
And you're right. They usually do not pick such a constitutional sheriff, but he is, and he's a good man in that Santa Cruz County, which is the Nogales area right on the border.
Yeah.
Good man, Sheriff Hathaway. Thank you for having me.
And the interesting thing is, Sheriff Mack, that Sheriff Hathaway, as I pointed out, became sheriff. Why? Because people had had their liberty threatened with these mask mandates, and he was the only one of the candidates who said, I'll stand up for your liberty.
Yeah.
People understand that now, and that is the thing that can unite us, Republican and Democrat. It must unite us, that stand for liberty, the understanding of the Declaration of Independence, so we have individual rights that we have as human beings, creatures of God, and that government's purpose is to protect those rights. That's the fundamental purpose. That's the way you began. It's not the purpose of law enforcement to write tickets. It's to, first of all, protect us and protect our liberties from these types of threats. So people can find out more about that at cspoa.org. That's where they can get information. Pass information to the sheriff so they can sign up then as posse members there at cspoa.org. Anything else you'd like to tell the audience?
No, that's it, David. Thanks so much for having me. But again, folks, the solution is in your hand. Excuse me. Solution is in your hand. Let's do it.
That's right.
Join us in this holy cause.
That's right. Absolutely. Yeah, we have a chance. Our institutions have failed. We have a chance to rebuild them. The question
That's right.
is, how are we going to rebuild them? Who is going to rebuild them? According to what standards will they be rebuilt? Thank you so much, Sheriff Mack, CSPOA.org. We'll be right back, folks. Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via or donate via Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family.
Whether you're feeling like the blues or bluegrass, APS Radio has you covered. Check out a wide variety of channels on our app at APSradio.com.
Let Let me be by myself in the evening breeze. Listen to the murmur of the cottonwood trees. Send me off forever, but I ask you please. Don't fence me in. Don't fence me in. Just turn me loose. Let me straddle my old saddle underneath the western skies. On my cayuse, let me wander over yonder till I see the mountains rise. I want to ride to the ridge where the rest commences. Gaze at the moon until I lose my senses. I can't look at hobbles and I can't stand fences. Don't fence me in. Don't fence me in.
All right, and we're going to push back against those fences. One of the key ways that they're going to fence us in now is with the mandated Trump shots. And as we look at the hypocrisy, the amazing hypocrisy of our government, just consider the fact, as New American points out, the CDC says that unvaccinated Afghans are bringing in measles, polio. They are bringing in, they say, things like tuberculosis, other diseases. You know, when we talk about mandating vaccines for the military, what is the justification for that? Well, you know, we have to send you places like, oh, I don't know, Afghanistan. When we send you to Afghanistan, we don't want you getting sick with polio, tuberculosis, measles, malaria, all these other diseases that are endemic. So we're going to have to vaccinate you. But then on the other hand, if they bring these people here, they don't have to vaccinate them coming in. This is part of the insanity. But it gets much, much deeper than that. You know, as we talk about measles again, measles, very, 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 very rare that you would have. They're very contagious, but it was not something that was very dangerous. It's extremely rare that anybody would have any serious side effects of that, especially as children. So you want to get the disease as a child. And it was important just a couple of years ago for the precedent to be set by President Trump that we would remove religious and medical exemptions for MMR shots.
They have to get the shot. The vaccinations are so important. This is really going around now. They have to get their shot.
It's so important. It's so important because they were laying the foundation for what is happening right now. As they point out, also riding in with the Afghans will be malaria, a parasitic disease. Though eliminated from the U.S. in the early 1950s, the CDC says travelers continue to bring malaria into the country. Numbers of cases have risen since the 1970s to 2,000 cases a year. Well, I guess we'll just have to have Fauci talk to Pfizer and come up with more pharmaceuticals, right? For money. For money, of course. And you can have Psaki. We'll tell everybody, when individuals come across our border, they're assessed for if they have any symptoms. If they're not intending to stay here for a lengthy time, it's not the same thing as when somebody's flying into the country, she told Ducey from Fox News, Peter Ducey. He said, why is it that you're not setting up any COVID tests? Why aren't you mandating vaccines for these people? You know, as they talked about the fact they were giving ivermectin to the Afghans that they were flying in, they said, well, it's because they have some endemic parasitic things, and, you know, we want to stop that. And yet, did they give them any vaccines? That wasn't clear whether they gave them any shots. So that dog just does not hunt. But when you look at how bad it has gotten for the military, I've talked before about fighter pilots who have been trained extensively, a lot of time invested in these pilots in terms of training and very other other specialized situations. But now they're going after the Navy SEALs as well. And you had Tucker Carlson saying that he had been contacted by individuals talking about this. One of them, a pastor, Jeff Durbin. I don't think he talked to Tucker Carlson. This was an interview that was done by Just the News. Pastor Jeff Durbin has been ministering to the special operators for weeks, the SEALs. He said between a quarter to a third of all active duty SEALs are involved in this mandatory vaccine dispute. A Human Events article that's at Zero Hedge, Navy SEALs told they will not be deployed without a COVID vaccine. Navy SEALs are risking being blocked from deployment if they don't get vaccinated. The number of Navy SEALs involved in the dispute with the Pentagon amounts to as many as a quarter or more of active members, a loss that could impact military readiness. One of the lawyers involved said, my clients include several Navy SEALs who are a small part of a large group of SEALs and other military members who are being asked to choose between their faith and their ability to serve our nation. They've been told that if they seek a religious accommodation, they likely will be no longer able to serve our country. See, the essence of what this is really about is to see where you stand on religion. One of the first things that was done in this Congress this year was the Equality Act, they call it. But it's about equity. And it's not even about getting equal results. This is about hammering religious institutions using LGBT. And very clear what they're trying to do in terms of using that wedge, using that to punish religious organizations, private religious schools, and so forth. And now you have the Biden administration working on a purge of people who have sincerely held religious beliefs not to get these vaccines. Want to purge them out of the military, out of the SEALs, out of the Air Force, the fighter pilots. Want to purge them out of the police forces because they want to have a police force, a military that is not going to have any sincerely held religious beliefs. That is a very dangerous situation. You know, by the way, before we get off of LGBT, this clip came out recently of Justin Trudeau, who just reestablished his position. He didn't gain anything there. As a matter of fact, they lost one seat, but he was hoping he was going to get a majority. But he was signaling to the LGBT people that they will give everything to as they persecute Christians. Here's what he had to say.
I will never apologize for standing up for an LGBTQ2+ kids' rights to not have to undergo conversion therapy.
Yeah, you understand how confusing that whole thing. He's not only confused about the initials. He's confused about the fact that children have rights, separate and apart, distinct from their parents. They have a right to undergo this conversion therapy, right? To not undergo the conversion therapy. In other words, what they're trying to do is convert them into LGBT. And if you have somebody who is a Christian or who is has a different understanding of this, that wants to talk to them or their parents, he will not allow that to happen. He wants to say, no, they're naturally LGBT. We claim them for our own. You're just a breeder. Shut up. I want you breeders to shut up. We're going to take your kids from you. Now, he's very confused. He doesn't even know the initials of the group. That's the LGB Trudeau group. But going back to the Navy SEALs, as the pastor who worked with them said, there are hundreds of Navy SEALs who have not been vaccinated, who do not want to take the vaccine, or who have recovered and have the benefits of natural immunity. A large number of SEALs that I'm speaking on behalf of are facing the very difficult decision that even with a legitimate religious exemption, based on their commitment to Christ, the gospel, God's law, and the Constitution, they will no longer be Navy SEALs. They're essentially being asked to make a decision between their commitments to the Lordship of Christ and their careers as Navy SEALs. This is the bargain that is being presented to everybody, but especially now to the people who are working in the hospitals, people who are working as firemen, as police officers, as military. This is what they want you to do. Don't tell me this isn't a precursor to the mark of the beast. You will jettison your sincerely held religious beliefs, especially if they're Christian, if you want to stay in this position. And by the way, also take this thing that we've developed with our cannibal transhumanism. I see it. I just don't understand how so many Christians are making a career out of it. I understand they can get views, and perhaps it's something that a lot of Christians want to see. They don't want to have that fight. They don't want to have that kind of conflict. And so they want to go to somebody who's going to tell them, yeah, you just got to do, you got to do whatever they tell you to do. Well, don't worry about it. Don't worry about any convictions. Don't worry about sincerely held religious beliefs. You submit to God by submitting to evil. That's what they're telling you. No, no, no. Right there, 1 Peter 2, one of their proof texts that they use, right there was talking about authority and your submission to authority. It says, submit to God, resist evil. Submit to God, resist evil. Submitting to evil is not submitting to God. It's just that simple. They're two separate things. And they are pushing out anybody, whether they're the SEALs, whether they're a fighter pilot, Top Gun, it doesn't matter. You will jettison your sincerely held religious beliefs. And you will obey this antichrist federal government. They have set themselves in opposition to Christ. They have set themselves in opposition to any and all sincerely held religious beliefs. They have set themselves in opposition to the Constitution itself that gave them their authority, that they swore to uphold. These people, we have a government of denethors, unfaithful stewards. So the pastor goes on to say, they're essentially being asked to make a decision between their commitments to the Lordship of Christ and their career as a Navy SEAL. And all the military are, everybody in the military, whatever they are doing. Our country should be very concerned about what this would do to military readiness. Losing hundreds of Navy SEALs because their legitimate, sincerely held Christian beliefs could be devastating to us as a nation. Well, it's not really about our military readiness. It's about how they want to turn the military and the police and the hospitals and the emergency workers and the teachers, they want to turn them against this country. And they want to have people who are going to be on their side. That's what they're doing. They're consolidating their control. To be clear, in case you're wondering if this is in response to some kind of crisis, Tucker Carlson said, we don't believe a single Navy SEAL has died of COVID. These are some of the healthiest people in the world, the Olympic athletes of the military. That's a good way to put it. Tucker Carlson said they're the Olympic athletes of the military. Many of them have had the virus and recovered, meaning that they have more natural immunity than the vaccine could ever provide. You got, as I pointed out yesterday, I played the clip. Fake Jake Tapper and Fauci saying, well, I don't know. You know, yeah, there is such a thing as natural immunity, but, you know, you really need to top it up with synthetic immunity. You really don't have, you're not, you may have a good immune system. You know, maybe you got a good enough immune system that you beat this virus here, but you could have a supercharged, super immune system. You know, you just got to get that vaccine. I can set you up with it, right? No, no, no. The vaccine, if you have encountered the real thing and your body has overcome it, you have trained your immune system. That's the purpose of a vaccine, is to train the immune system. The vaccine, never have they created a vaccine that directly fights a disease. That would be a therapeutic. No, it's to train your immune system. And what they're doing is they say that they're training your immune system with something that's not the same thing. And it's even worse than that. They're not training your immune system. They say, well, we got this protein spike. But it's not the same as a protein spike on the thing that we're looking for, assuming that they had an isolate, which they don't. But it's not the same thing as the actual virus. So what makes you think that it's going to work better than if your immune system saw the real thing, the entire real thing, not just a synthesized portion of what they say is the real thing? It's absolute nonsense. But that's what they're selling you on CNN. Tucker Carlson went on to say, keep in mind that there's only about 2,500 active duty Navy SEALs, each of whom cost at least $500,000 to train for the U.S. government. But it's even far more than that. I mean, you know, you go through, it's like the fighter pilots or any other thing. You go through your initial training and your specialty, but then as you do it over a period of time, that experience is really more valuable than the initial training that they spent $500,000 to train you with. And that's what you're losing. A U.S. Army slideshow, by the way, he points out, actually put up the seven tenets of Satanism as part of the vaccine pitch. And this one slide there, questions from Friday that they showed to the military, and Tucker Carlson verified that this was shown. He said that we couldn't get any information from them as to why they showed this or who put it up there or what they were going to do about it, but they did admit that, yeah, that was a real slide. And so it shows this satanic picture, the seven tenets of Satanism, and it says, how many children were sacrificed to Satan for the vaccine? Well, good question. They're sacrificing children at the FDA and the NIH and the Planned Parenthood and the University of Pittsburgh. They're sacrificing children all the time, aren't they? Fresh, not frozen. He said, we just obtained a PowerPoint from the Army used to justify mandatory vaccines for the troops. In it, the sympathetic portrayal of Satanism. How many children were sacrificed to Satan because of the vaccine? The slide reads, apparently sarcastically. The presentation then proceeds to list the so-called tenets of Satanism, taken straight from the Temple of Satanism's website. You know, by the way, I just got to say, as we're talking about Satanism and this other stuff, it's also resurfaced just the last few days. You have General Flynn going to a particular church, leading the congregation in a very, very bizarre prayer. He was talking about the sevenfold rays and things like this that go back to one of the co-founders of theosophy, something that began, I think, in the late 1800s, but was very popular with the intelligentsia in the early 1900s. But it refers back to this principle, which is an occultic thing. He talks about, you know, the sevenfold tenets and how we're going to have power, and it was straight out of theosophy. Never mentioned the name of Jesus or Christ or anything like that in it. I mean, and then, of course, if you go back and you look at pictures of Flynn, and while we're talking about Navy SEALs, he was proud, and it was back in 2014, he was proud to offer an award to the first transgender former SEAL, a guy dressing up like a woman. There's a picture of it. I mean, this guy's got this big jaw, you know, dressed up like it. It's more ridiculous than Corporal Klinger. He looked far more masculine than Corporal Klinger, but he was dressed up as a woman, and there's General Flynn handing him this award, beaming from ear to ear, talking about how wonderful it is to recognize the LGBT, and that was way, way back. So if you think there's a difference between, you know, the Trump camp, for example, and the Biden camp on this LGBT stuff, maybe you missed all the pandering that was done to the LGBT by Trump and by Melania, talking about how much they loved the Supreme Court's homosexual marriage, how they had done so much to put LGBT people in positions of authority, just like all the rest of this stuff, just like the vaccines. There's really no difference between them. Really isn't at all. It's professional wrestling, folks. So Tucker Carlson went on to say, so here you have the United States Army doing PR for Satanism. Yeah. It falsely claims that only three people have died from taking the COVID vaccine. And the slides. Isn't that amazing? Say only 3,000. They kind of missed a few zeros, didn't they? Or three people. It's like three times 10 to the fifth power. Is what is really the casualties that are there. It's a real tragedy. So we have the Army, he said, talking about this today. They ceded that the PowerPoint you saw is absolutely real. Troops saw it, but it was somehow not approved by Army leadership. They didn't explain how that works or what they're going to do about it. And he points out that it's not just kicking people out who have sincerely held religious beliefs, but it's also kicking out people because of their political orientation. He said the purpose of military is to protect and serve the entire population, no matter who they vote for. In an authoritarian system, you'll have a military that is aligned with a specific political party. You understand that as these people are trying to invent an insurrection, they're doing one themselves. It is a coup. When you have a coup, what do? You identify elements within the military that are going to be your political allies, and you get rid of the other people who are not, you know, from the not going to be political supporters. That's what's happening right now. They say it's about the vaccine mandate. They say that it's because we've got an emergency pandemic. They say that with an emergency pandemic, we're going to wait a couple of months before we force these mandates out. But this is what is happening. This is a banana republic with nuclear weapons, and they are consolidating their control of the military for the next stage, for when the coup goes hot. That is exactly what is happening. Tucker Carlson went on to say, to this day, we're not aware of a single white supremacist on active duty who's been discovered by the Pentagon and fired. Not one. That threat never existed at all. It was fake. It was a lie. Several National Guard troops were relieved of duty around Inauguration Day, although no one explained why they were fired. Then a senior commander in the Space Force, Lieutenant Colonel Matthew Lohmeyer, also lost his job. Now we know why. His crime was to criticize Marxism, because that is now a firing offense. A firing offense. So as we look at this, as we understand, you know, if we look at Australia, we know where this is headed. We know exactly what they want to do. Australia has been ahead of us all along, but they've been following the same plan. We had last July 2020, we had the green zone plans that were done by the CDC. And you can see, first we're going to isolate people this way, then we'll do it neighborhoods and communities, and then ultimately we'll put them in the camps. And they've gone three out of the four steps already in Australia. And they've already prepared the camps, and they're bragging about the camps that have been built by these construction workers who are now being told, obey or else. Again, we can build the structures that are going to be imprisoning us, literally do that. We can also do it metaphorically, or we can take this over ourselves and we can reestablish the society on the principles that we want. This is what it's going to look like if we don't do that.
Attention, this is a police public order warning. You have previously been directed to leave. Leave now or force may be used. No further warnings will be given.
Leave now and never come back. Leave now and never come back. We told him to go away, and away he goes, precious.
Yeah, that's right. But now we can all get our precious vaccine, right? I mean, that is amazing what we have here, that the obsession with these vaccines, no matter what happens, no matter how you shut down society, the supply chains, the food chain, no matter what you do in society, the only thing that matters is the precious. The precious. It has become that level of obsession. And one has to wonder what kind of a mind state these golems that we have running every single one of our countries. What is going through these guys' minds? What is this obsession with the precious, with the vaccine? By the way, I'm not taking any vaccines from Gollum. And you shouldn't either. I mean, this should be a big warning to everybody if we've got to take that vaccine. So we got some new information that's come out inadvertently in the UK. This was something that was published in Scotland by Public Health Scotland. So they have PHS, Public Health Scotland, and they have PHE, Public Health England. And unfortunately for Public Health England, Public Health Scotland published some figures and inadvertently kind of showed what was happening in England as well. 30,305 people died within 21 days of having a COVID vaccine in England. Remember, we just had the slide show that Tucker Carlson obtained telling the troops only three people have died of COVID vaccines. Can you name more than three people? Well, see there, I'm telling you the truth. It's only three people. No, like I said, three times 10 to the fifth, and that's just in England, and that's just within the first 21 days. We've never seen a vaccine where this type of stuff shows up this quickly. Again, the previous one that showed up very, very quickly, the best tie that we've ever had to massive injuries, adverse effects from a vaccine was Pandemrix 2008, 2009. That was the vaccine made by Moncef Slaoui and Fauci for swine flu. and it showed up within a year. It took a year for it to show up in the kids who have a faster metabolism rate. This is one of the reasons why they started with really old people and started working the ages down. Because when this thing is really going to hit, you know, it's taking a while to show up, and it's not going to show up as quickly in the older people as it does with the younger people. And they want to make sure that they've got everybody injected with the precious before these things start showing up, before people catch on. It took a year for that to happen, very serious side effects. And for people to say, well, look, you know, this happened 6 months ago, and yeah, they had blood clots, and they had a heart attack, and they died, or they nearly died, but that was 6 months ago. We've never had a vaccine where things have happened and developed so rapidly. 30,305 people died within 21 days of having the COVID vaccine just in England in the first 6 months of 2021. This is not even current to today. This stopped in the summer as of June. First 6 months, they killed 30,000 people with this vaccine in just England. The official Office for National Statistics, ONS, data has inadvertently revealed 30,305 people have died within 21 days of having the COVID vaccine in England during the first 6 months of 2021. Public Health Scotland published the figures on the 23rd of June, 2021, in their COVID-19 statistical report, in which they revealed that in Scotland, they had an additional 5,522 people died within 28 days of having a COVID vaccine. Between December the 8th and June the 11th, they were hardly vaccinating people the early part of the year. So 5,500 in Scotland, another 30,000.3 in England. What do you think it is in the U.S.? Public Health Scotland revealed the numbers by brand of vaccine and date of occurrence in a published spreadsheet. By the way, you can find the link. I got this off of, what is the name of this website here? It's elcolectivode1.wordpress.com. El Collectivo Diuno. I don't know. If you need the link to this article, I'll be happy to send it to you. I don't think you'll ever find it from that. I can't pronounce it, and it's too many letters. Anyway, the spreadsheet shows that 1,877 people died within 28 days of having the Pfizer jab. 3,643 people died within 28 days of getting AstraZeneca, which they have in the UK. We don't have that here. And two people died within 28 days of having the Moderna jab. But again, Moderna was late into the thing. Doesn't necessarily mean that it's that much safer. But just under 2,000 for the Pfizer, about 3,600 for AstraZeneca. The reason people have been requesting to know the number of people who died within the first 28 days of having a COVID vaccine is because these are the exact same parameters that were used to count alleged COVID deaths for the majority of the alleged pandemic. Deaths are counted as COVID-19 if they occur within 28 days of a positive test. However, at the beginning of this nonsense, they were actually counting deaths if they occurred within 60 days of a positive test. Except they didn't have the positive tests. They were telling people to do clinical diagnosis, right? In the United States. And here's your bonus from Trump. $13,000. And 20 to 25% for everything that you give them then afterwards. A report published by ONS, and that again is in the UK, the Office for National Statistics. A report published by ONS on September the 13th was a clear attempt to dupe the public into believing the majority of COVID deaths all are occurring amongst the unvaccinated population. But the date parameters used in the report include a huge swath of deaths that occurred during the second alleged wave in January. So they're storing up these things. This is always, and this is why I played last Friday, the merry-go-round that we got involved in with climate change. Not only are the end goals the same, not only do they have the same dictates that they want to enforce on your life, whether you're talking about global warming or climate change or the pandemic, all of the endpoints are the same, even the same endpoint date, 2030. But they also use the same deception tactics. It's the same MO from these criminals, the usual suspects, the same people running both of these scams, and they do everything the same way. They pull out people with titles. They argue from authority. They don't want to have a discussion of data. They don't want to make this about science. It's about scientism. And so you're not allowed to look at their data. You're not allowed to question their authorities. And they hide the data. But it's always a numbers game. And it's always to push you to the same dictates that they've already prearranged that they want to do. So they go on to say that if ONS had decided to cover the third wave, they would have seen that 75% of the people who died with COVID-19 with it were, in fact, vaccinated. Only 25% of the people who died were not vaccinated. So as you can see, and by the way, that is higher than the proportion of vaccinated to unvaccinated people. Even if it were the same, they don't have 75% of the people fully vaccinated. Even if it were the same, what would that tell you? If the people came out and said, well, you got a higher number of people dying who are vaccinated because we got more people who are vaccinated. Well, let's say that you had 75% of the population vaccinated, and then you had 75% of the population who died. What does that tell you? It tells you, first of all, that it's not very effective at all. But it's worse than that, because they have a higher percentage of people who have died that are vaccinated than they do of the overall population that is vaccinated. So if you got a 60% vaccination rate, and you got 75% of the population, it says that you're worse off if you got vaccinated, which is exactly right. So as you can see, the vast majority of deaths during this current wave of COVID are occurring amongst the vaccinated population, but they tell you exactly the opposite. Fully vaccinated people accounting for 75% of COVID deaths in the UK summer, according to the latest information from Public Health England. And then we'll take a look at India, Uttar Pradesh in India. Now, you may have never heard of Uttar Pradesh. I'd never heard of it before. Do you realize how many people live there? 241 million people. 241. This is just one Indian province or state. It's a state. And so they have 241 million people. You know, when we look at, you know, we're all familiar with Australia. Australia's got something like 24, 25, 28 million people. I don't, somewhere in that, 20 millions of people. It's about the same population we have in the state of Texas in Australia, the entire area. And yet, look at Vietnam, 98 million people in Vietnam. We've talked about them. We've talked about their the fact they didn't have any deaths there at all until they started the vaccination program, and then it shot straight up. And then you go to India, where just one state has 241 million people. That's about 10 times the size of Australia's population. And it's almost two-thirds of the entire United States population, even with a massive wave of people coming in now. So this is very significant if you've got a situation where in that big a population, think about it, two-thirds of the United States, they've essentially stopped having people getting sick and die. What have they done? They've put in ivermectin. They've promoted ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine to its massive population. And they're using it prophylactically. They're using it to prevent people from getting sick in the first place. And if people are sick, they've increased the recovery rate up to 98.7%. And this is in an area where they don't have a great deal of health care. So the recovery rate has up to 98.7%. 7%. Uttar Pradesh reported only 11 new COVID cases and zero deaths this week. It is the first state in the country of India, according to the Indian Express, to introduce large-scale prophylactic and therapeutic use of ivermectin. So if somebody's sick, they give it to them. If before the people get sick, they give it to them. In May and June of 2020, a team at Agra, and they mentioned the doctor's name, Dr. Parikh, administered ivermectin to all of the team members in a hospital on an experimental basis. And they noticed that nobody there developed COVID-19 despite being in daily contact with patients who had tested positive for the virus. So what would you conclude from that? If you were a health organization that was actually interested in people's health, you would say, hey, let's do this works. You know, we want to try to make people well. So what does that tell you about the health systems in the United States and the UK and Australia and all the rest of these places where they're keeping this away from us. That's not their objective. Their objective is to get you injected with the precious vaccine. Their obsession. They have an obsession. They don't have a health objective. They have an obsession with the precious. They added, based on the findings from that, the state government then said, hey, we've got something that works. Let's use it. Instead of, let's take away the medical license of these people who found a cure. Let's hector them. Let's call them conspiracy theorists. Let's discredit them everywhere. Cancel them. And let's hoard this stuff and take it off of the market, which is the response of our criminal government here in the United States. But in India, the state government sanctioned the use of ivermectin as a prophylactic for all the contacts of COVID patients and later cleared the administration of therapeutic doses for the treatment of such patients. So if you've been in contact with somebody in your family is sick, okay, you take this before you get sick. It's exactly what we saw Dr. Zelenko did. He said, I can give this stuff to people. They don't get sick. They don't go in the hospital at all. Same thing America's frontline doctors did. Same thing any person who is honest would do. These people are corrupt criminals. They're working for the pharmaceutical companies. They want you sick. They want you dead. They don't want you on their Social Security welfare rolls. They'll do anything to keep that from happening. In Italy, we have the sudden death of a young Italian athlete, the conspiracy of silence. About that, we're seeing yet again. This is in an area of Italy called Catania. The Italian newspaper pointed out that he turned 20 last June, promising volleyball beach volleyball player, to suddenly drop dead. No need to look any further with that. I got this disturbing letter from a listener in North Carolina talking about what is happening in the hospitals. I thought you might want to know that in North Carolina, at the Baptist Health Hospitals, they are forcing anyone who comes into the ER to get vaccinated or no treatment of any kind. I have a friend who's a farmer, close friends to an ER nurse, who told him that everyone who comes into the ER is vaccinated or refused service. The crazy thing is, the same nurse forcing others to get vaccinated or no service was also complaining about the fact that he's losing his job because he refuses to get vaccinated. My farmer friend said that even if they refuse, they're given it anyway. The nurse said it is now company policy across all Baptist hospitals to vaccinate everyone that comes into the ER. I may be mistaken, but from my understanding, the Baptist and merged a few years ago. I'm not sure exactly what they have there. Which means that all the hospitals in North Carolina are forced vaccinating anyone that comes in. When I first heard this, I became so angry and sad as I knew the day would come, but I never wanted to be here to see it. I'm a mother of three. The youngest is 4 months old, of which I had an unassisted home birth to avoid getting COVID testing and masks. I don't know if they're telling the mothers before they go in that they have to be vaccinated to give birth in the hospitals, but I do know that they are telling the pregnant mothers that it is safe and effective. If you know of anyone in North Carolina that needs assistance having an unassisted home birth, I have had two home births, and I don't pretend to be an expert, but I do have a birthing pool. I can loan this to people in North Carolina if they contact. So anyway, share the experience of how I prepared to have a legal, unassisted home birth in North Carolina. So if you contact me, and if you want to have information, I'll pass your information on to her, since she's offering, if you're in that situation. She said, by the way, it is illegal in North Carolina for a certified midwife to be present at a home birth without an OB write-off. And all OBs in at least the triad area, where I'm told, they would lose their licenses if they signed off on any midwife home birth. Yeah, you know, I wonder what happened to those midwives in under Pharaoh when they didn't kill Moses. Did they lose their licenses? They might have lost their lives if they'd found out what was going on with it. But yeah, we need to understand that we're going to have to operate under the radar here. So anyway, I know even offering help to pregnant moms may be risky, but the time has come. I know so many who worship the mainstream medical narrative, But there are alternatives, and we have to learn about them now to save each other's lives and the innocent children coming into this world. As a matter of fact, I don't have it here on my desk, but I had a story that I didn't get to yesterday about a lady who was 77 years old, and she went to a hospital in Massachusetts. She was not vaccinated. They said the family said everybody was very, very, very nice to her until they found out that she wasn't vaccinated. And then they got very brusque with her. They demanded that she be vaccinated. She said no. They wanted to give her several things. They wanted to put her on a ventilator. She said no. She's basically, the family was fighting them over putting her on a ventilator, fighting them over the fact that they would not give her any medication that she asked to have. They wouldn't even give her any vitamins. And so then they said, all right, let's just get her out of here. Then they wouldn't let her out. A case of medical kidnapping, which, again, we've seen this happening with children and other patients for quite some time, but now it is much broader in its scope. Marty Gottesfeld is in a federal prison, held incommunicado, one of the communication management units, because he exposed information about a young girl who's being held as a medical kidnapping case in Boston Children's Hospital, affiliated with Harvard. Harvard, very, very powerful politically in that area. And so this type of thing has been going on a lot of different hospitals. It's not just Harvard. A lot of hospitals. There were other cases of Harvard, Boston Children's Hospital, and medical kidnappings done there. They have an international reputation, you know, like Fauci. And just like Fauci, they're not concerned with people's health. Though there were other cases when I looked at that of people who had come to the United States, one of them from Scandinavia. They kidnapped, nearly killed their kid. Couldn't get them out. They didn't like the health care they were getting, couldn't get them out. So this happened to a 77-year-old lady. Again, because she was not vaccinated, they actually were very, very hostile to the treatment there. But she's, anyway, this listener says, P.S., my husband is a truck driver and has the same mindset I do. Actually lost his job over not wearing a mask. But he got another one recently, and we will keep hopping jobs if need be. They have made their decisions. They have thought through this situation, and they are not going to be shoved into something that they do not agree to ethically. Going back to what I was talking about before in terms of the surveillance in your car, you know, isn't it wonderful we now have this device? And I imagine it will be mandated pretty soon by the federal government. I mean, if they're going to mandate everybody have a breathalyzer in their car, something that was reserved, an expensive thing that was reserved as a last resort for somebody who had repeated offenses of drunk driving, to essentially lock out your being able to start it unless you got approval from the device. If they're going to do it for that, you better believe they're going to start monitoring everything that you do. And, of course, a big part of this, and I've said this many times, I've talked with Eric Peters about this many times as well, that is really why I believe they're only pursuing one type of electric car. This has nothing to do with emissions, nothing whatsoever. This has everything to do with the fact that if you, again, if you were to go the route that Toyota has done, and saying, all right, you're worried about emissions? We can make an electric car that has zero emissions. And so they made a hydrogen car. And you could go to, assuming that there was an infrastructure for where you could get a fill-up on a hydrogen car, you could go to the hydrogen gas station. Yeah, hey, about that. It actually becomes gas. literally true. It's no longer gasoline, it's now literally gas. So you could go to the gas station, the hydrogen gas station, and you could fill it up in not too much longer than it would take you to pump gasoline or diesel into your tank. And then you could be taxed at the pump, right? But if you've got a car that is an electric, battery-operated car, and you can plug it in anywhere, then they're not able to tax you when you fill it up. And so you have to be taxed by them observing how much you drive. Hence the phony need for a black box in order to make sure that we got taxes for the road, of course, right? You know, we can tax the gasoline, the diesel, and even the hydrogen fuel at the pump. But, hey, if you're just charging up anywhere. Well, now we have to have a black box. And once they put the black box in the electric cars, even if you've got some of the legacy cars around there, even if they are not successful in shutting down our ability to get gasoline and diesel by shutting down the production of those things, even if they didn't do that, you know that as they get to a certain critical mass of people who have to have the black boxes and have to pay the road tax, those people are going to be saying, well, the other people need to pay the road tax as well. They need to pay it a mileage fee. So we'll all have to have the black box put in. Once you put the black box in, then it starts measuring everything that you do and the way that you drive and reporting it to the insurance company. So the insurance company can raise your rates based on the amount of driving that you're doing, based on the way that you're doing it. They can have the government fine you because they think that you didn't stop the proper way at the stop sign and so forth. And now they're rolling out the surveillance to do that. It's already in the Amazon trucks, as I point out. So how does this look living in this kind of society? Again, this is something that has really been developed with American technology. It's really part of a system that DARPA has been putting out, all of this geospatial intelligence. We see it as the biometric social credit system in China. But this is really coming from America. You know, the Internet was a brainchild of DARPA psychologists in the early 1960s. They were the ones who, as it became practical with switching stuff, as I've said many times, they created the venture capital firms to fund the competitors who are then going to fight it out to see who wound up as the masters of the universe, as Breitbart calls them. And now we know. And we know what this is going to look like because we can see it as it rolled out in a beta test in China. The Chinese didn't invent this, but they were the beta test place for it. Kind of like this bioweapon stuff that Fauci and the NIH are doing, you know, in conjunction with Wuhan. A Chinese student who is now in Canada and who had only 2 followers on Twitter was hunted down by people in China. Listen to how this happened. And listen, think about this. This is just a student. He's not politically involved. But he violated their prohibitions saying that he's, you know, if you're a Chinese student, the Chinese communist government doesn't want you on Twitter. Even if they're not concerned about what he had to say, they'll still come after you. So he contacted this author, said, gave him his name. They said, well, we're going to call him Dan because he wanted to be anonymous, and so I'll just call him Dan. I'm from China. I just graduated from a Quebec university, and I hesitated for a whole night before deciding to write this email. Now I am living in China, but I'm also living in fear from the Chinese government, even in China. Dan, whose name I've changed to protect his identity, hails from one of China's picturesque and relatively laid-back southwestern provinces. He studied English diligently and was elated when a top Canadian university accepted his application to study law. After about a month, about a month before the start of the September 2017 session, when Dan was still in China, the university issued his student credentials, and with them, he received access to a virtual private network, a VPN. That VPN allowed him, for the first time in his life, to scale the Great Firewall of China and access an uncensored internet. So what China does is they restrict, you know, they can tell if you're not going through a virtual private network, they can tell where you're located. Anybody can. If you have a VPN, what that does is it hides it from your internet service provider. It hides where your location is, hides your identity. So it basically allowed him for the first time to see outside of the limited internet that the Chinese government provided. Curious, the 21-year-old thought that he might check out some overseas social media sites and connect with future classmates. He read some world news, so that he wouldn't seem to be out of touch once he arrived. He would be joining a cohort of Chinese international students in Canada, totaling about 140,000 that year. He decided to take a few basic precautions. So think about this. They track this guy down. He's got a total of 2 followers on Twitter. And he's one of 140,000 students. They've got enough people and they're Chinese Stasi that they can focus on every one of these 140,000 people, even somebody who's not an influencer. to his amazement, he took a few basic precautions since he hadn't left China yet. He signed up for Twitter using a fake name and a fake location and even set his gender to female. To his amazement, the platform was already full of Chinese language users. A whole network of bloggers, artists, independent journalists, and scholars were engaging in a level of dialogue on Chinese politics that he had never seen. So he got busy when he came into Canada. He wasn't really active on social media. And with only 2 followers, he wasn't making any kind of a splash. But he was sharing some posts that still gave him a thrill. His undergraduate studies did offer some opportunities to discuss international political systems, and the problem of lower-level government corruption wasn't a completely taboo topic. But virtually all Chinese people know that publicly supporting high-profile dissidents or satirizing top leaders is strictly forbidden. You do not show a meme that compares who was on first? Who was there? Who was there before? Now we have she is on second. But they had a little meme of President Xi walking beside Obama. And they had a clip of Winnie the Pooh and Tigger, because Tigger's quite a bit taller than Winnie the Pooh. And so people started using Winnie the Pooh as a cartoon reference to Xi. Xi was not amused. She who must be obeyed purged Winnie the Pooh out of Chinese life. Months passed. Life got busy. Dan didn't have any time to keep up his exploration of social media. He never got involved in any political activities on campus either. Rather, he focused on learning about the Canadian legal system in hopes of staying and working in the country. Then his father called him out of the blue. Clearly disturbed, he said, "Son, did you say something about the Chinese government on the internet? The Public Security Bureau called us twice." Soon after Dan got the warning from his father, a police officer contacted him on the WeChat social media app. Dan had not accepted a new friend request, but the officer was able to send him messages and call him anyway. "I told him maybe they found the wrong person." His email to me earlier that week contained a detailed timeline of what had happened, along with screenshots and audio recordings of his conversations with a public security agent. I was impressed with his detailed documentation. He said, "The police told me the Ministry of Public Security, that's China's internal policing department, had tracked me by my IP address and knows where I live in China. They have evidence the Twitter account belongs to me." The officer never raised his voice, but his tone became sterner as the conversation went on. When Dan asked what would happen if he refused to accept responsibility for the Twitter account, the agent told him in Mandarin, "You will face trouble." Trouble is a well-known euphemism in China for state persecution. It can range from repeated visits and phone calls all the way to travel bans. Oh, travel bans. Oh, we're looking at that, right? Rejection for jobs. Oh, that as well. House arrest. Oh, you mean like lockdown? See, we're on the China plan, right? China plan. We're not just getting one from column A and one from column B. We're getting all the things from all the different columns, and they're going to start intensifying. Chinese authorities also routinely threaten relatives in China to silence the dissidents abroad. This is something, by the way, that I saw with people who were engineering students when I was at USF, and the Shah was still in power. And the first time I saw people showing up in public protests, and there were peaceful protests, nothing violent, but they had signs about how awful the Shah of Iran was, and they were wearing masks, and I asked them, I didn't really have any Iranian friends, but I had a lot of them in classes, and so I asked one of them, I said, "What's up with these ski masks that you're wearing? Why are you doing that?" You know, I'm kind of naive, living in America, growing up in America, it's like, hey, this is a free country, right? We used to say that. We actually used to say that when I was growing up. Oh, yeah, it's a free country. Do whatever you want. Don't make a federal case out of it. Yeah, we don't say any of those things anymore, do we? Everything is a federal case, and there is no freedom. Anyway, they were saying, well, we don't want our pictures taken, because if our pictures are taken, they will persecute our families back home. And we have a secret police. It's called the SAVAK. They were trained by the CIA. the CIA that overthrew our government and installed the Shah of Iran. And these people are ruthless. They'll torture our relatives if they see us speaking out about this ruthless regime. Now, do you think that a government that would train secret police 50 years ago is capable of doing that same type of thing now, 50 years later? Oh, you better believe it. This is why I'm talking about what's going on in China, why I talk about what happened in the Shah of Iran under that CIA-installed regime. You better understand that we don't live in a privileged position. America is not exceptional when it comes to liberty. We have the same fallen nature that everybody else does. As a matter of fact, we have accrued over many, many decades, I would say centuries, the cream of the evil crop. Evil people have been drawn to the power and the money in Washington to the extent they've eviscerated our institutions. And they are not as evil as the rest of the governments. No, they're worse. They're worse. We are the source of what is happening in most of the world. We are the source of these vaccines. We created this. Trump created it. He's proud of it. Created, delivered by a military. You think the military is going to be doing other things with the precious? So, Dan whispered to me, he said, to be honest, I'm terrified. He whispered it to me so that people in the library would not hear it. And he has reason to be suspicious about this, because if we look at what has happened to our university institutions, again, they are the canaries in the coal mine. You want to know what kind of a society they're preparing people for? Look at the fact that they turned our schools into prisons a long time ago, saying we're going to have lockdown, we're going to have metal detectors, we're going to have prison guards, school security guards, right, all this stuff. All of this has been planned. You look at the Marxism, the racism that is being taught to successive generations of teachers. They come up through the regular system of K through 12, then they go into college, and then they get it more intense, and then they go right out of college without any exposure to the real world, back into the K through 12 system, where they are more radical than the teachers who taught them. That's this constant feedback loop of Marxism, of racism, of the type of thing that Bill Ayers and the Weather Underground began at the beginning. They were the ones who popularized white privilege. It was called white skin privilege when they were doing it. Bill Ayers stopped blowing up buildings and got into education. And so if you want to know what this is going to look like, this article from Michael Tracy says academia is establishing a permanent surveillance bureaucracy that will soon govern the rest of the country. He said, having now received a tsunami of messages from people across the U.S. and many internationally about the surveillance regimes being permanently installed at their educational institutions, in contravention of earlier assurances that the current academic year would be a long-awaited return to normalcy, there are a few conclusions to draw. First, unless and until COVID cases are abandoned as a metric by which policy action is presumptively dictated, these institutions are destined to continue flailing from irrational measure to irrational measure for the foreseeable future. Just turn your gaze over to one of America's most hallowed pedagogical grounds. As of September 17th, Columbia University has newly forbidden students from hosting guests, from visiting residence halls other than their own, and from gathering with more than 10 people. The stated rationale for these restrictions? Administrators have extrapolated from the contact tracing data they've compulsorily seized that a recent increase in viral transmission is attributable to students who are, quote, socializing unmasked at gatherings in residence halls and off-campus apartments, bars, and restaurants. So they are watching everything they do, and they're saying, well, we got a case over here or a case over here. Again, I'm not going to get into all the nonsense about the testing. But because they get a positive case, they now have all this contact tracing information. And just as we saw the lockdown measures, as we saw the scanners into schools, now the contact tracing, which is at the essence of this, the very basis of this. And I knew that Greg Abbott was a traitor when the very first thing he did with that big bonus check that he got from Trump, you know, Trump is handing out billions of dollars. He gave the Republican governor of Idaho, Little, He gave him about four times the entire state budget that he could spend at his discretion with whoever he wanted to. He took Newsom. Everybody upset about Newsom. Well, Newsom had a big deficit. He had like a $12 billion deficit. He wound up with a $77 billion surplus because of Trump. And when Abbott got his money, the first thing he did was he ran off to a organization that nobody had ever heard of before, had a little shell office up in Frisco, Texas, gave him $300 million to do contact tracing. First thing he did, contact tracing. We had mainstream media saying at the beginning of this, before anything was done in terms of the lockdown, hey, we see what's happening in China. It's pretty creepy, but we need to have that here in order to deal with the pandemic that's coming. Well, the pandemic was tyranny. And so they're rolling this out, these other places. Just think about this. You go to an Ivy League school or a name brand school like Columbia University. Why do you go there? Why do you go to Yale or Harvard or some of these places? It's because you want to make a connection to people, right? The curriculum's not any different, right? I'd get the same books if I wanted to read that garbage. I could get the same academic books. As a matter of fact, we use the same engineering texts that they did at Georgia Tech or MIT where I went to school. No, you go there because you want to hobnob with other professors. You want to hobnob at Yale and Harvard, places like that, Columbia University. You want to hobnob with make connections to people. It isn't going to be what you know, but who you know after college. So that's why you pay the big bucks and you compete to get into these areas. And now if you go to those areas, you are sealed off from making those kind of connections. How does that make any sense for anybody to go to these elitist schools? Michael Tracy says, just like Connecticut College, so many other institutions I've been taking flurries of messages about. Columbia has already mandated vaccination for all students, faculty, and staff. It is approaching 100% compliance. Duke University, as I point out, got 100% compliance. And guess what? They're all still locked down, masked up, isolated. And they're proud of it. So for many people in positions of bureaucratic authority, universal vaccination was never going to be sufficient for a transition away from the permanent emergency mode of COVID. No, the infrastructure will not be dismantled anytime soon, because so doing so would require accepting a major paradigm shift in how COVID is understood, but it would also take away their power. He points out, one member of the Ad Hoc Infectious Disease Task Force, Ariella Rabin-Rotremel, currently serves as the college's interim dean of institutional equity and inclusion, is also the associate professor of gender, sexuality, and intersectionality studies, has a specialty in queer theory and activism. And here is Rotremel answering a Zoom question from an anonymous student. Student says, I don't understand why we have to be masked up when all COVID-19 does for us is give us a small cold. I understand wearing masks in the classroom to protect the teachers, but no masks should be required by anyone anywhere else. And so this person, who is the Dean of Institutional Equity and Inclusion, Professor of Gender and Sexuality with a specialty in queer theory and activism, says, it is important not to spread it to everyone. For example, staff that work in dining or who clean your dorms or in the library, etc., as well as students and faculty. And as Michael Tracy says, well, I'm sure they is a lovely person, because, you know, this is a person who is specializing in queer theory, so they must have a they pronoun. We are legion. There are many of us in here possessed of something, right? But it's unclear why Rotremel should be endowed with the authority to issue virology-related policy pronouncements. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Pretends she's a doctor. You know, we have a football team in Putnam County, Tennessee. The Americans United for Separation of Church and State complained about the fact they were having prayer, that they said they were proselytizing at Cookville and Upperman High Schools. We're not allowed to talk about that, right? The only thing that they should be able to proselytize on is Marxism and racism. They should be allowed to proselytize about sex to kindergartners, gender fluidity to kindergartners, but do not proselytize about religion, about Christ. So they intimidated them. They said, well, you know, you've got some voluntary prayers that are happening after the game. We don't want that to happen again. And of course, this is Tennessee, so this is the rest of the country had faced this type of censorship decades ago. But this organization, Americans United for Separation of Church and State, are complaining about the government schools. They're not public schools, they're government schools. And so as a result, the people got together, the parents said, we're going to have a prayer anyway. And this is what it looked like when everybody voluntarily got out there. They basically emptied the stands. Folks, if we stand together, we can win against this. That's it for the program today. Thanks for listening. Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.